Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Powerful Jimmy Smith. Whoa, you just abruptly, you got crazy today. The super AIDS he caught in Vegas this weekend.
It's affecting his mind.
It's already affecting his work performance. Settle. This may be how many of us on the planet Earth, dudes who do what we do.
We were saying five if you're generous.
Yeah.
Five or six if you're generous.
If you're generous.
Yeah, if you're generous.
Yeah, there's like you, me,
Shivalo.
Yeah, of course, Morrow, Pat Miletich.
Yeah.
This is a very small, I mean, Frank group. Shamrock, it's like how many guys? Stephen Bonner does it, he does it well, you know, Kenny does a good job. It's not that many people doing that.
No.
It's a strange gig, isn't it?
It's weird, and I'm sure you get the same thing, what I try and tell a lot of people. I had a lot of fighters with outstanding careers. We're seeing the retirement of the second generation of MMA. Not the founders, you know, Hoist and, you know, the second generation is starting to break down and retire, and I've had guys literally coming up to me going, how did you get this gig?
Right.
Because if you think about it,
yeah,
how the fuck did we get this job? In a sense, you know, it's crazy. But there are very few that actually do it. Very few.
There's so few. For folks who don't know, Jimmy does the commentary for Bellator, which is the second biggest promotion in the United States. And they're on Spike TV now. They've actually, like, taken the position that the UFC had and just had the first fight. So you've been around, like, a long-ass time, man. You've been doing commentary, like, for Bellator for how long now?
Bellator 3, M1 for 6 years I've been doing this. Wow. I did M1 before Bellator. So I did 3 years of commentary nobody was listening to get good at it before I got on Bellator.
Yeah. Well, it's cool that you had a little bit of experience doing television stuff, though, but you were already loose enough. Like that's like a big thing for guys is like just figuring out how to loosen up so they can explain themselves. It's a weird gig because the only one who's going to be able to do it is – it's not going to be possible unless you train. You're not going to be able to see things.
You'll sound like a douche too.
Yeah.
The only thing that really personally bugs me about commentary is when people question somebody and they haven't been there. I got a lot of people questioning somebody's heart or they get hit. They go down from a body shot. You even hit in the liver, you go down. And if you've trained, if you sparred, you know that.
Yeah.
And people that don't and I think are hard on fighters and question their heart or question their desire when they haven't been there and gone through that. That bugs me.
Yeah, you know what? But that does bug me. That bugs me a lot. Yeah. What else bugs me is people saying that they know who's going to win. That bugs me. I mean, I'll talk shit on occasion if, like, I see a matchup and I go, oh, there's no fucking way. Like, this is a crazy matchup. Like, when Seth Petruzzelli fought Kimbo, I made a video of it. I was in a green room in Atlanta, and we were about to watch the fight, and I thought it was Ken Shamrock. And literally right before the fight, I got off stage. I'm like, it's about to happen right now. And they go, Ken Shamrock's out. I go, he's out? I go, who's fighting? And they go, Seth Petruzzelli. I go, oh, no. Seth's going to kill him. Like, Seth Petruzzelli is legit.
Yeah.
And people are like,
the people in the know knew how that fight was going
to
go.
Yeah, but the people that fucking, the crazy people over at CBS who said yes to that, or whatever. Was it CBS?
It was CBS
at
the time, I believe.
Like, who, do you have anybody that knows MMA? That's a mismatch. But, that's a gross mismatch.
So, you and I know the disconnect between the people that put MMA on TV and the people that know MMA is huge.
It can be huge.
Network people, the people that put MMA on TV don't always know MMA, and it crops up a lot, man.
Well, it's a weird thing because you and I, essentially, we sort of established positions in the sport doing commentary like as it grew, and it became this thing that it is now. While, you know, when we both started out, I mean, you go back to 6 years ago, it was not nearly as big as it is now. It's bananas how big it is now. And it sort of happened, I guess it was really, if you want to break it down, it actually happened around 8 years ago, right?
Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, that was eight.
It was really the biggie 8 years ago.
Yeah, was it 2004, 2005? Whatever it is, in that area, from there, that started this. But, like, the level that it's at right now, like the fame of a GSP or an Anderson Silva or a John Jones, like, they're right up there with basically any athlete in pro sports.
Yeah.
The top level guys. Like, they're talked about on a, you know, like, in bars and in the same way people talk about plays and games. They talk about GSP, you know, landing a giant knee or something like that. It's interesting how this has happened, and while it's happened, I mean, we essentially just had to figure our own way through it, you know. And learning like what's the best rules and seeing the rules change and things. Like when I first started, it was bare knuckle and you can wear shoes. That was UFC 12. That was the first UFC I ever did commentary on. I did post-fight interviews, rather. And to see it from there go to where it is now with flyweights and bantams and feathers and lightweights. I mean, there's a lot of lightweight guys now.
The first time I fought was at a thing called Neutral Grounds in San Pedro.
I remember
which
Neutral
was
Grounds.
Neutral Grounds. And
is that pancration? Is that like slap fighting?
It was kind of pancrase. It was kind of amateur, but not real. And this is back in the day when it wasn't sanctioned in California.
Right.
They literally had everybody line up, and I was next to this dude, and they went, "You guys, same fight, fighting each other." We didn't weigh in, nothing, and we went in and we fought.
That was
how it worked back
they,
there.
They used open hands, right?
Right.
Because you weren't you,
to the face.
Close
fist to the body. We had no gloves on, no nothing.
This is how crazy MMA used to be, folks.
Yeah.
It was really nuts. And there's a bunch of weird rules in MMA that are, there's just total ignorance and from just misconceptions. One of them is that. One of them is the downward elbow. The downward elbow is a crazy one.
Makes no sense.
The reason why the 12-6 elbow is illegal, Big John McCarthy told me this, that when they were describing the martial arts techniques to the athletic commissions, the guy, one of the guys who worked for the athletic commission said, "You can't have them do that thing with their elbows because I've seen that on TV and they can break boards, by golly. What would it do to a person's skull?" Like, this guy thought for some reason that this was in any way, shape, or form as bad as Anderson Silva kneeing you in the head.
It makes no sense at all.
It's legitimately ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's a rule that's in place, like, strictly because of ignorance. And there was so many of those in the beginning. Nobody knew what the right thing to do was. They were like, "Well, you can't have MMA." And they're like, "Okay, well, what if we wrestle and slap fight?" I'm like, okay.
So that makes no sense at all, but we're going to go with it. Yeah.
That was what it was for a while. Yeah. You would have pancration fights. In pancration fights, they would pull their hands back. It was real. Boss Rutten was the only dude who ever figured out how to deliver, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, he could knock out one of those,
Because Boss has this crazy anatomy, first of all. He's these giant-ass long hands. And he figured out how to pull his hands way back. So that is like his fingers were almost like facing towards him. So it's like a punch. He's punching you with his palm. You're not catching any of the fingers. Nothing's absorbing. The idea, I guess, of a slap being easier is that your fingers are absorbing some of the impact and your hand is moving back, which takes away that. But Boss is hitting you with this. He's like straight punching you with his palms.
Do you remember the exchange when Frank Shamrock went for a leg lock on him and Boss is just and Frank's smiling at him and laughing and shit?
Yeah.
There's a problem with that. There is a problem with your rule system when that's happening.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was ridiculous. It was funny, though. Frank Shamrock was funny in that fight.
It developed, and I say this all the time, MMA now, it developed from, for good or for bad, from a sport of martial artists to a sport of athletes.
Yeah.
Now it's a sport of athletes that don't necessarily, like, we were talking right before the podcast about Rory McDonald, what a badass he is.
Mm-hmm.
The guy started MMA at 14. He didn't grow up doing Kyokushin. He didn't, doesn't come from a martial artist background who said, "Oh, I'll turn this into MMA."
Yeah.
These guys just study MMA. They approach it like you're saying, the NFL or like the NBA or any other big time sport. And that's come with advantages and disadvantages.
Well, they're training like professional athletes right now. And there is a massive difference in your ability to move, your ability to withstand shots, the ability to keep your energy levels up. When you're training in the gym, and, you know, especially if you're doing just only kickboxing or only grappling, you can get in tremendous shape. But in this day and age, it seems like to beat a GSP, to beat like the highest of highest levels competitors, you got to be both. You got to be both a martial artist who's very technical, and you also have to put the fucking time in that you don't want
to
put into that strength and conditioning. You got to do it. Nobody wants to do battle ropes. You don't want to fucking hurl ropes until your body feels like it's going to explode. But if you don't do it, there could be just that little less juice that you don't have in the third. And it causes you to either get caught or it causes your opponent to get away from something where you caught him in something, but you can't squeeze it and he gets out of it. And you're like, fuck.
The only time that isn't wasted in training is cardio training. Let's say you spend all your time on boxing.
Yeah.
All your time on boxing. The guy's a better boxer than you. Fuck.
Yeah.
You spent that time inappropriately. You have X number of hours in the gym. There's no negative to being in better shape than the other guy.
Yeah.
There's no we were just talking about it. There's no negative to being in better shape than
you
the next
guy. You can beat guys that are better than you if you can wear them out.
Every time.
It happens all the time. It's happened to me. I've had guys that I usually tap like crazy. Then I'll go in the gym and I'll be out of shape and I'll get dominated. You know, I'll get mounted. It's I'm like, motherfucker. It's like I'm not in shape for it.
Yeah.
And if you're not in shape, it's a fact that you're not going to be able to defend. You're not going to be able to execute to your fullest of abilities.
The hardest part is I'm on the road 12 weeks in a row because I have a 12-week season. So I'm literally gone. I fly out tomorrow. I don't get back till Friday morning. So I'm really home on the weekends. That's it.
Do you train when you're on the road?
That's the problem is, you know, I'm working out. Pitbull Brothers in the elevator. They turn to their translator and go, Pitbull wants to know if you want to roll with him. All right, sure. Fine. Go to my gym. I go to my room. I change up. I go, and I train with Pitbull Brother for 2 hours. I'm not in that kind of shape, man.
Right,
that guy has
right.
a fight the next day.
Right,
he's
right.
peaking. He is like, Daniel Gracie was like, hey, Jimmy, you want to roll with me? And I'm like, all right. You know, but you're not in that kind of shape.
Right.
You know,
right.
you're in there training with animals.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go home for 4 days, come home. I just don't have the time. You know, back when I was fighting, I was a 6-day-a-week guy. And that's where these guys are.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm fighting with guys, you know, world champs. And I'm like, oh, this
sucks. People kind of don't understand, like, the level of conditioning that's required to compete in MMA. It's so taken for granted. Unfortunately, it's like there's the aspect of the sport that has to do with what kind of shape you're in is so gigantic. And there's levels. And some guys, like a Frankie Edgar, they never let the cardio drop off. And every time you see them, you can tell they've been pushing it. They've been pushing it. And you build a base. You get like a Nick Diaz type base. Like Nick Diaz has such a strong cardio base because he's constantly swimming, constantly biking, constantly running. His cardio is sensational. And you can't keep up. You can't. He will drown you. If you get in a fight like that with Nick Diaz, like one of those, like who can keep up this pace fight, he's going to go 60% on you, maybe 70%. And then you're not going to be able to keep up. You know, you're going to try to mix it in with 100%, but his chin's made out of iron.
He's a volume puncher.
Yeah.
He'll box
eat you up.
Paul Williams, for the boxing fans out there, he was a great boxer, recently got paralyzed in an accident, but he'd throw 150 punches around.
Yeah.
Just 100. It's just, that's Nick Diaz. He just throws so many punches.
So
the guy just won't go away.
So hard.
Just will not go away.
And his chin is iron, you know. It allows him, and he's very relaxed, so he rolls with shit good.
He's never committing to a punch. So you never catch him committing on you.
Right.
You never get that big counterpunch because he's
right.
He's slapping you. So
that's such an important point. It's
he's not committing, so you can't catch him with a counter shot. There's a
dude named Michael Jai White who's a very smart dude and a great martial artist as well. A lot of people don't know. You see him in movies. You think he's not like a real martial artist. No, he's totally legit. He's
the one the Joker cut a new mouth in.
Yeah.
He
played Tyson in that Tyson documentary. But anyway, my point is, he was explaining, like, dude is a lifelong martial artist, and he was explaining to Kimbo, him and Kimbo were talking about throwing jabs and throwing punches from just a relaxed position, and that when someone does that, you don't even see it coming. It just lands. And they were, like, going over this, like, something that a lot of people don't realize. When you, like, tense up and you, like, telegraph, your chances of hitting the guy are significantly lower than if you just hit him. You just hit him like that. And a guy like Nick Diaz is not straining. It's not full blast. It's mechanical. It's like tap, tap, pat, 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 pat. It's this mechanical, and you're starting to see stars, and then you'll step back and like, I'm going to blast this dude to get him off me. No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're going to try to, but then you're going to wear yourself out with that big explosion that you can't keep up with, and he's going to keep 60%ing you. Pat, 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 pat.
What people don't understand is there are X amount of training sessions you can go through in your career. There are X amount of hours you can train. There are X amount of punches you can throw. How you spend that energy defines how you are as a fighter.
Yeah.
Nick Diaz is not a knockout puncher, never been a knockout puncher. He throws so many that you're eventually done. He'll wear you the fuck down.
Though. He dropped Robbie Lawler.
He dropped Robbie Lawler with a jab.
Catches you on the chin.
Fadeaway jab that Robbie Lawler stepped right into because that frustration.
Yeah.
That's what he does to you. He unloads until you're just like, you get frustrated. And you do something stupid, and that's when he takes you out.
Fight, too, was one of the classic shit-talking fights.
Oh, that was awesome.
Because that was one of the first times I've ever seen Nick. He got into the octagon, and as he got into the octagon, he looks over at Robbie Lawler, and he's got his arms out. He goes, Stockton, motherfucker! And he starts pacing back and forth. And you can see Robbie Lawler's like, what is going on here? Like Nick Diaz like claiming the 209 and walking out with his arms out. And then he proceeded to just talk mad shit through the whole fight. And you could tell Robbie Lawler was like, what?
It's you know what's funny? Sherdog called me to break down the last Diaz-Ben-Henderson fight. His brother Nate took similar fighting style, of course. And he said, what do you think of all that Nate Diaz come get me? You know, all the mugging and throwing the hands up and the shit talking. Their footwork isn't great. And what it did is he brings you into that zone with the mugging and the come on in. And the thing is that when you saw that same problem with Nick against Carlos Condit, if you don't engage him, his footwork isn't great. He's a little flat-footed when he throws his punches.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that mugging and come on, come get me is come into my range. Come into my
game.
Kind of fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's very calculated. What did Robbie do? He stepped in, ate really a jab hook, not a super hard punch, but stepped right into it, boom, and went face down on the mat. That's part of his strategy.
Interesting about the Carlos Condit fight is like Carlos Condit fought very similar to the way he throws his techniques, but he just did it moving away. And picked his own spots.
Yep.
Picked his own spots and moved away. But like when he landed that head kick, you could tell just by the way he landed that is not a full blast head kick. He's just throwing it up there quick to land it, just because he can if he does it that way. He really took a page like out of Nick's book in that sense.
I totally think he did.
Yeah.
I totally think he did.
I think a lot of guys, I mean, you think you have to deal with that style because the fucking guy doesn't get tired. He doesn't get tired and he takes a tremendous shot. That's a bad combination. You know, like KJ Nunes was able to cut him. That was, you know, he's successful in that way. But, you know, but then Nick outboxed him in the rematch, you know.
The only one to really outbox him, Diesel Riggs, outboxed him a little bit harder. Just, I think, landed with a little more force. Remember, he won a decision against Nick in the UFC.
What about Jeremy Jackson, the earliest
Jackson,
of his career?
Back in the day.
Jeremy Jackson is a wasted talent, man. Jeremy Jackson was a real wasted talent, unfortunately. That kid had whatever issues, you know, he got kicked off of The Ultimate Fighter, I believe.
Left the set.
And he's got some really big legal problems now. I believe
he's in prison.
Yeah.
It doesn't get a lot bigger than doing life.
Yeah, I don't know what he did. I don't know what the crime was, what he was accused of, and whether or not he actually did it. But I physically, that dude, he was like,
great
think
boxer.
To this day, he's the only guy to stop Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
Besides the KJ Noon cut, which is just the doctor saying that the cut's too bad. It wasn't like that he was in danger. It was just he couldn't see. Blood was pouring into his eyes. And it just looks really grisly. But Jeremy Jackson stopped him, like legitimately. Yeah. And Nick was really young at the time. It was, you know, I think he was only 18.
Yeah, it was a right hand over the jab. He had that low jab.
Yeah.
And he hadn't quite learned to keep that hand up and use and volume punch guys. He was coming in, ate a right hand over the top, and just stunned him, and that was it.
He had some hands, man.
He did.
He had some hands where there wasn't that much in the UFC in terms of, like, he had, like, Jens Pulver-type knockout power.
Yeah.
You know? It was sad to see that guy. It's like he came along in MMA just a little too early. And to have the endurance to get from the Nick Diaz, you know, 18-year-old stage where MMA was then to get to be like a pro today, a few guys.
Nobody.
A few guys. Josh Barnett. There's a few
Josh
guys.
Barnett.
Yeah. Josh is a rare example of a guy who's been in the game a long fucking time and still competes at the top level.
The thing that, you know, Rob Lawler, another one, 19 to 29.
That's a long time.
You have to be open to the kind of changes that destroy athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be open to, I mean, MMA in the past 6 years has gone, you know, from 3 to 10 as far as the talent level and the competitiveness of it. And to stay in the mix even, to stay in the discussion that long is unbelievable. And you have to make the kind of cardio commitments and training commitments that a lot of people with that, I would say in the beginning, martial arts mentality of this is the way I do things, didn't make it. They didn't make that transition. And a few great athletes did. And that's why they're still around.
Yeah, it's a weird time to see those guys that didn't quite come along at the right time.
Yeah.
You only have a certain amount of time that you can go balls out in MMA. And it varies depending upon your style and varies depending upon grappling. I think a lot of it is really saves a lot of guys like Randy.
Yeah.
You know, Randy was able to continue his career like way longer than he probably would have if he was a pure striker. You know, it's the fact that he was able, even though he took some big shots in some of the fights, he was able to close the distance a lot of the time. And he was able to control guys up against the cage a lot of the time. And that minimized like a lot of damage that he could have taken and allowed him to extend his career with, you know, just with intelligence.
Look at this physical gifts that go first.
Yeah.
Speed. timing, your ability to gauge the shot. Roy Jones Jr. went off a damn cliff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because once you lose that, it doesn't come back.
Well, I think with Roy Jones Jr., you also have to consider neurological damage.
Oh, severely. Yeah. But it's one of those things
and
where...
And I hate saying that, but if you want to be a realist, you have to look at the Glenn Johnson fight, where he was completely out cold, and the fact that it was shortly after the Tarver fight.
Cleaned.
You know what got what ruined him, man? When he went down in weight.
Cutting weight from the Ruiz fight back to light heavyweight killer.
A lot of folks don't know he won the heavyweight title. He fought John Ruiz and boxed his fucking face off. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful fight. I mean, you're talking about a guy who won his first title at 168, and all of a sudden he's fighting as a heavyweight and fighting great. And there's also... You gotta question what the fuck he took to get to be a heavyweight. And when you get off that shit, the reality is. It
stuns your body.
It stuns your body. Your testicles stop producing testosterone. And his body looked way smoother in the Tarver fight than we had ever seen him before. He looked like depleted.
Yeah.
He didn't look good. And he, you know, he was really weak from that weight cut.
The great thing about sports, MMA, any sport, is that you see people that are doing things that seem beyond the physical limits. Yeah. That's what sports is all about. Your body will pay you back. You cannot keep you cannot keep pushing that envelope. And you know, the fighters that do that we see pushing envelope all the time, there's a price to pay. Your body will come back at you. And that's just a human fact of life. And as commentators, we see so many fighters in so many various stages of their careers. And we kind of see the long term in a way a lot of other people don't. Because once somebody gets off a fan's radar, they're still on our radar. They have to be. That's our job.
Yeah, like Pedro Hizo, for example.
Pedro Hizo, perfect example. Yeah. Okay. We saw him from knocking out Josh Barnett, which, by the way, new MMA fans who haven't seen that fight, get it on YouTube, watch that fight when he knocked out Josh Barnett. Amazing first time.
Everybody knows I get a
boner. To the end of his career.
Everybody knows I get a boner for leg kicks.
Oh, the king.
But that guy, I've never felt pain through another guy feeling pain the way you do when Pedro Hizo leg kicks somebody. Because your whole body, like, tightens up. Like, you hear that thud, you go, oh, my God. He kicks so fucking hard. The hardest leg kicks I've ever seen in MMA.
Randy Couture, he had him limping.
Randy Couture was in rehab for 6 months.
Yep.
For 6 months, he had to rehabilitate his leg. He rehabbed leg kick injuries for 6 fucking months. That's how hard Pedro Hizo fucks your legs up.
Great fight.
And he creates these like weird welts. Like for the rest of your life, you're going to have these weird like vein welts where your veins – like you ever seen like Randy has those?
Yeah.
And Kevin Randleman has those?
Uh-huh, he has
a lot of Muay Thai guys get those too. Those weird – that's from like just severe punishment over and over again to your leg. You develop these weird
funky veins. I think the wall of the veins start giving out from getting hit
over me. Oh, Jesus.
But I used to train a place called North Hollywood Muay Thai, which was where Malapet and guys like that would train. It was this old Thai gym with all these old Thai guys there. And it was amazing training. And – yeah, the guy, all the trainers walk around like that. And they had, their shins were like steel. I mean, they were literally like iron. You know,
they don't feel their shins anymore because you hit the skin so much that it becomes like a knuckle. It's like, it's weird. Like those guys have been doing it their whole life. They literally don't feel shit. Like regularly people will kick ropes that they wrap around like a pole. They just thud their leg into the rope over and over again just to deaden it. So that becomes like a weapon, and that shit is slamming into the meat of your fucking thigh. Ugh.
The thing is, and I tell martial people into various combat sports, I go, MMA is like, I call it the dark side of martial arts or combat sports. Quicker, easier, more seductive. Those guys have, in Thailand, 200 fights.
Yeah.
You have your first 100 fights before anybody knows who you are. It's dead serious.
100 fights.
200 fights. Jeez. Okay? Sanchai Sword Kingstar is like 240 fights, 30 losses, whatever the hell it is.
And people that don't understand the culture would never be able to wrap their head around the way they do it there. They fight at a very young age, and they take on the last name of their gym. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a slavery sort of a situation, like they own you.
Bocao had big problems with his gym.
Yeah.
Big problems.
I understood he recently left, right?
Yeah.
And is Parpromet his name, or is it
– I think it was his gym's name.
That's the gym's name.
I think it was his gym name, yeah.
And
yeah.
Buakaw is his actual name.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they take on the – and it's a weird thing, but those guys take the first round off essentially.
Well, first and fifth.
And the fifth
first
as well.
First and fifth, yeah. If you go to Thailand, first round, I saw a great fight. It wasn't great. It was fun. In Thailand, a Turkish dude was fighting a Thai guy, and it was like 160, which is like heavyweight in Thailand. And the first round, the Thai guy's just feeling him out, not really throwing anything. Mm-hmm. And the Turkish guy's going, this guy's scared or something. He thought he was scared and right. kind of went after him. The Thai guy's just defending, whatever, and he thought he was kicking ass. Second round, the Thai guy opened up on him, crushed his leg. They stopped the fight. Second round. They take the first round off. They take the first round off. They fight rounds 2, 3, and 4. And then the fifth round, they take off because they know who won already. And I was asking my instructor, I go, why are they just walking around? They go, well, they already know who won, and they fight next week. He goes, he fight next week. So it's like, okay, you win. And it was weird. Like, as an American, our mentality is, you know, last round, fuck it, I'm behind you, go crazy.
Yeah.
They don't really do that. They fight rounds 2, 3, and 4, and then fifth round, they take off because he already won. I got to fight in 10 days. When your career is 250 fights, one loss doesn't mean a whole lot.
It's so fascinating that literally one style figured out how, like, what is the most effective? What is the most economic use of your physical tools when it comes to striking? This one group of people in this one small chain of islands. I mean, it was Thailand's a couple islands, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you consider, yeah, Phuket Island as part of it, yeah.
These motherfuckers figured out how to do it. Kick the shit out of your legs, elbow you in the face, flying knees. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, you know, if you don't know that stuff, all the other stuff becomes invalid when it comes to stand up. You need all the other stuff. But if you don't understand those leg kicks, if you don't know how to check them, if you don't, especially if you get a Pedro Hizo type dude hitting you, you don't, there's guys that can hit you over and over again in the legs and you can take it and you can have, you know, they can hit you like 20 times and you'll still be moving around at the end of the fight.
Yeah.
But then this Pedro Hizo, who is a couple of those, you hear that. You hear that meat-cutting shin just dig into the dude's thigh, and you see the look in his eyes, and you go, oh, Lord, you ain't got so many of those,
The
dude.
Misery of fighting a guy like that, which I had to do in Thailand a couple times, is it doesn't knock you out. Please knock me out. I can go down on the fight. So you're standing there, and you either quit or you keep going. That's it. That's your choice. When a guy kicks you like that, I can either quit because this sucks, or I can keep going. It's not like a knockout where you're like, bang, you're on the canvas and it's over.
Have you ever been stopped from leg kicks?
Never. Never. But it sucks. I mean, I've had trouble walking the next day, but I never quit because of it.
Dudes can hit you so fucking hard.
Oh, God, it's horrible.
Oh.
It's horrible.
And it's such an easy, it's like an economic movement. You know, the movement of like the Thai leg kick, it's not something that requires like a great amount of strength, like a wheel kick or a spinning back kick. It doesn't require a lot of dexterity. It's natural for the average human being. That's one of the cool things about it. It's like if you understand the technique involved in Muay Thai is surprisingly technical.
Yeah.
And you can see a lot of guys who are not athletic specimens, but they excel at it because their technique is so good. They know what to do when this happens. They know what to do when that happens. They've gone through it so many times in the gym that they throw that left hook. If your right leg's there, that right leg kick's coming, and then the jab's falling behind it. And these combinations, these classic combinations, they start to get through. So even like a guy who's more athletic can't fuck with a guy who's more technical in Muay Thai. More so, I think, even than boxing. Because I think boxing, when you shut it down to just two things, left hand, right hand, and all the combinations that you could throw, a super athletic guy like a Roy Jones Jr. is always going to beat a slow, cumbersome guy.
Yeah. The thing about a Thai kick, and I've been hit with every kind of kick doing Fight Quest and stuff like that, it's not hard to see. There are only really three targets. They hit your leg, they hit your ribs, or they hit your head. But it doesn't matter. If you get something there, all right, I see him hit for my ribs and you block it, they don't care. Yeah. They'll throw one at your elbow. I saw Andy Sauer fight Yeltsin Clyfertex. If you know anything about Muay Thai, it's an amazing matchup. By the end, Andy Sauer's arm was like bright purple and all swollen because he kept blocking me. Keep blocking it. They'll throw at your elbow. They'll throw at your shin. They'll throw at it. They don't care.
When you have a guy who hits really hard and you hold the pads for him, how much it fucking hurts.
That sucks.
That shit hurts. Yeah. Imagine it hitting the outside meaty soft part of your arm with no pads. You know, a guy like Peter Ehrts, how many of those are you going to take? You're going to take three? You're going to take four? And then you're going to want to cry for a month.
Yeah.
And your whole body's going to be all fucked up. You just can't take those.
It's not a sport where you can say, I'm going to train really hard and be okay tomorrow.
No.
You don't. You just have to accept. I've done it in Holland. I've done it in Thailand. It was like, it sucked. You just have to know that this is what I'm going to go through.
Jerome LeBanna, one of the greatest of all time.
Awesome.
Never won a K-1 championship, but he was on his way. And Ernesto LeBanner was winning the fight, and Ernesto Hoos kept kicking his fucking arm. Just kicked him in the arm until his arm broke. And then you see LeBanner go down and tried to get back up. He tried to get back, and then Hoos kicked him right in the same fucking spot again. Like, bitch, sorry, slam, same right into that broken arm. He lost a fight from broken arm. I mean, at the highest level of the game, So that's you have to always be worried about taking those shots from a power kicker.
In terms of MMA, the mentality is you can go through a wrestling tournament and probably be okay at the end. If someone said, if they went, hey, Joe Rogan and Jimmy Smith, you guys are going to grapple each other for an hour.
Right.
We could do it.
Yeah, we could do it.
We could do it. Fine. You know, whether I'm in shape or not. Yeah, we're not in shape, but we'll do it anyway.
Yeah, you can take breaks. You'll survive.
Muay Thai for an hour?
No. Yeah.
Is hell. And it's that mentality of you have to learn to get through that kind of shit to be a good mixed martial artist. And a lot of guys can't do it. And that's the stopping point for a lot of guys.
And the elbows are just starting to make their way over. The really good elbow specialists are just starting. Like Anderson has always been a master.
Yeah.
Especially in the clinch. He's a master at the dirty boxing elbow. Like he'll pull you aside with one hand. Anderson is so surprisingly physically strong. And we saw that in like the Rich Franklin fight. Rich Franklin's a fucking stud, you know? And then Anderson got that plum on him. It just started manipulating his neck and driving those knees in. You're like, he's fucking strong.
Yeah.
And the technique is perfect. His positioning of you is perfect every time. He knows what he's doing. And he would land like a lot of Muay Thai techniques. But as far as like the high-end athletes, you know, they all, I'm sure, are capable of throwing it. But who's been like super successful with standing elbows? There's only like a few guys.
David Loazza was good back in the day.
Yeah, Loazza, especially on the
ground. He was known for that.
Yeah, he would slice you apart.
Guys yeah.
Yeah, because he would let them fly. He would have like these fucking, like really wide elbows when he would come in. I mean, he was throwing torque into that. He did a lot of spinning techniques too. That famous knockout of Charles McCarthy with the spinning back kick. He was one of the first. Loazza was one of the first guys to drop a guy with a spinning back kick.
Mm-hmm.
That's way before, you know, Dennis Seaver. He's become like sort of the specialist for it now. It's interesting to have seen that, man, to see that this sort of interesting progression of techniques. And they're like the fact that front kicks to the face have just started knocking people out in, like, was it 2011 that he knocked Vitor out? Like, how did it make it to 2011? That doesn't even make – it's such a good technique to learn.
They're almost – you know, the pendulum swings around in MMA. It always has. And a lot of those, if you want to say it, traditional martial arts techniques we didn't see for a while – are starting to make a comeback in MMA, partly because of Anderson Silva and stuff like that. You know what I mean? He's making them – people are seeing how it can be effective in small doses. You have it in your back pocket for when you need it.
Yeah.
It's real effective.
Well, the whole key is they only work if you have all the other stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is most of the like Taekwondo guys, they don't have all the other stuff. They don't have they don't know what leg kicks are, or they're not used to them. They don't know how to sprawl. They don't know how to grapple. So those techniques are never going to work. You're not going to get them off. So 'cause the guy's going to grab you and he's going to take you down. But if you know all the other shit, you know how to sprawl. Oh yeah. I wrestled in college. Oh okay. Do you know submission defense? Yeah, I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Oh okay. And then you go, okay, well, how long have you been doing Taekwondo? Well, I started when I was a little kid. I was like 5 years old. And, you know, you talk about a guy who fought a like karate style and then learned jiu-jitsu. Those guys are going to have like this weird advantage because they have this dexterity that the average person just doesn't possess. Like a guy like Lyoto Machida can kick you in the face in a way that the average person just can't do. And it's because he's been doing karate his whole life. Like Anderson, too. Like he had a Taekwondo background first and then learned, you know, Muay Thai.
That was shooter boxing.
He has this dexterity with his body. Like he can do shit.
Comfortable from both stances, which is a Taekwondo thing.
Yeah, because if you're going to allocate, like what you were saying before about allocating time to training, you're probably not going to put a lot of time on the wheel kick. If you're about to have an MMA fight,
you know,
you have to learn that shit sort of as a child or as a straight Taekwondo or karate competitor first. Because the only way to really pull that off is if a guy's not kicking your leg or if a guy, you know, is not going to shoot in and take you down. Like, for you to get good at that when you're a white belt, you're going to try and it's going to be way easier for people to take you down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's way easier for them to take you down than it is for you to land this outlandish move where you're twisting your body around like a fucking ballerina and they're going to drop it. You're going to throw it away. But if you start out in Taekwondo and develop those techniques when that's what everybody's doing, then you have them and then you can learn the other things as well. It's kind of ironic that that's like a big sport for little kids like Taekwondo is, but I think it's a good one.
It is.
It's a good one for
them. It is. I think so. You know, it's like MMA is basically a scaled down version of these different styles. Like, you know, wrestling, you see a million different throws, outside ankle picks and all stuff that you just don't see in MMA because they're not in that kind of range. But they have those things. And occasionally with a good guy, you see it.
Yeah. Well, it's always fascinating to me when a really good wrestler gets in there and you see guys who, you know, generally exhibit fairly decent takedown defense just get fucked up over and over again. Like Junior versus Kane in the rematch.
Right.
It was a perfect example. It's like Junior's takedown defense was the best in the business. He had been on his back for 13 seconds in his entire fucking UFC career, and he was the heavyweight champion. I mean, that's some ridiculous takedown defense.
He got tossed around like a kid.
Yeah. But then people say, well, who did he fight that was a really good wrestler? And you stop and you think about it and you go, Shane Carwin? Oh, look at this wrestling thing. This kid gets down and the fucking lights land on him. I hope he's
so
okay,
awful.
Man.
That is just awful.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And you're in parterre position, so you're like thinking about what you're going to do and then bang,
boom.
That sucks.
How heavy is that light, too? That fucking had to really hurt. All right, don't play it over and over again.
No, it's Madison Square Garden epic fail on YouTube.
Wow.
Everybody look at that because it's horrible.
Yeah, that's fucked up. But I think,
yeah, stylistically, who would he take on that had that kind of takedown?
Nobody. Shane, I know for a fact, came into that fight injured. Shane had been having a lot of back and neck problems.
Yeah.
And he came into that fight after he had gotten off of surgery. I think he had some sort of crazy spine surgery or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. But I know he didn't have much time to train. And I know he didn't have much time to do any sparring. You know, he's been dealing with some football injuries from way back when.
Yeah.
And it's hard for that dude to get through a solid camp without getting hurt. But he, if you go back to like when I think his best performance was Frank Mir. That was the scariest Shane Carwin performance. He just murdered Frank Mir. He got a hold of him, just mugged him.
He had Brock.
Yeah.
Had him.
He had him. Yeah.
Ran out of gas.
Yeah. Well, he fucked up.
Yep.
He didn't breathe. He was like throwing punches and not breathing, and then he just had nothing left. It's too bad because if he had just learned how to relax and pick his shots, he might have been able to stop him in the first round. First of all, and he definitely wouldn't have gassed out like he did. I don't know. It's a lot of it is adrenaline too. You're fighting for the title, and you just get this mad adrenaline dump, and then you realize the guy's still there, and you're like, Jesus Christ, I might actually have to go through four more rounds of this.
Everybody listening, man, I'm serious. If you are an aspiring fighter, if I have one piece of advice to give you based on what Joe's saying right now, never ever set a pace you can't keep. Ever.
Yeah.
Don't throw. If you have you have X number of punches in a round. Or you have X number of punches in a fight. If it's 300, don't throw 300 punches in the first round. I see guys do this all the time. They set a pace, and you go, look, you can't keep this up.
Right, you're hoping the other guy wilts.
You're hoping the other guy wilts, which is never a solid bet, ever.
It's not intelligent. Ever. It's not an intelligent way to approach it. It can be successful occasionally. For a guy like Wanderlei Silva, it could be successful for fucking ever. You know, it was successful because he was so murderous in his approach that he just freaked people out, and then they would stomp them and destroy them.
And then people figured out, wait, I can throw a left hook in the middle of this.
Right.
Well, and drop your ass, which happened.
Krokop really sort of exposed that.
Yeah.
The difference between a real high-level striker and a guy who's just wild, murderous brawler.
Angled off and took
But Wanderlei still is one of my favorites of all time.
Forever.
Just his fights were the most exciting. Nobody was fighting. Like, if you were going to go see a Wanderlei Silva fight, that shit was an event.
Yeah.
You know, when Wanderlei fought Sakuraba, you're like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
And you look at him across the corner, he's doing this shit with his
collarbone. We broke his collarbone.
Yeah.
Dropped 3 inches.
Yeah.
Well, you know?
My favorite one was that knockout, the fadeaway punch that he landed as he was stepping forward, and Sakuraba just flew backwards. Man,
his first fight with Dan Henderson.
Yeah.
He put Dan through the floor for 15 damn minutes.
It was a tough fight, and his face was all fucked up, too. He only had one eye. He could not see at all out of his left eye. If you wanted to look at swollen eye Anderson or Wanderlei Silva, maybe, you know, you probably find
first
a Google image. Yeah, off the first Dan Henderson fight. It was one of the worst cuts and swollen eyes I've ever seen a guy keep fighting with.
Yeah.
It was fucking nasty. You know, Dan had him hurt, too.
Dan had him hurt bad. Took him down, and then finally got up.
Well, Dan took that fight on short notice. That was the thing about Pride.
I was training with Dan at that time.
Were you really?
Yeah, he used to come to
Team
Punishment. No, I was at Team Punishment down Huntington Beach, and Dan, I don't know if he lived there at the time or lived near there. Him and Randy Couture came in there all the time, and that was one of the fights that I was training with him for.
Dan has always had that retarded power, just redonkulous.
And his strength. Have you ever grappled with him?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he's like grappling with a fire hydrant.
He's a wood man. He's made out of wood.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I grappled him once, and I actually had a cold. It sucked, but he mauled me. He got me in a leg lock or something like that. Maybe he got me in a head and arm choke or something like that, too. But he was he's like a dense dude.
Dude.
Like, he's like dense. Like, you hold on to him, you're like, the fuck is
he's got that grappler's build.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's a lot of dudes out there that you don't realize. Like, you look at them, and they develop this, like, freak grappler strength.
Yeah.
You know, from just years and years and years of throwing bodies around.
What Dan has done that a lot of people don't is he's adapted that to striking. Yeah. A lot of guys can't turn that into knockout power. They can't. In fact, it's hard because they're used to being such grapplers. They can't get that snap in their punches. Dan has somehow translated that grappler body into a knockout punch, which a lot of guys can't do.
Yeah, and typically it wasn't the Greco guys that would get like really good at striking either, right?
No, it was more
the freestyle guys, because the freestyle guys could shoot. And when you develop that sort of ability to explode in on a double leg, that shit, same shit can come with a punch.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Randleman is a perfect example.
Yeah.
He had that just unbelievably fast power double. In Kevin Randleman's prime, he was a steamroller. He would just freight train your ass. I mean, he was, and he could jump over your body. Like he was so ridiculously
crazy
athletic.
Yeah.
He could jump over your fucking body.
Yeah.
You know, and Randleman, when he would land a punch, he could land a punch the same way he could land that double. He would explode on you before you even know it was coming, and he could crack you and tag you. And that's what he did to Krokop. He knocked out Krokop. That was like a crazy surprise. And, you know, it wasn't a surprise that he had won, you know, if he took him down and, you know, mauled him on the ground.
Knocked him
but
out.
The fact that he knocked him out with, like, I think it was a left hook. So a
left hook in the first round. Yep.
Just ridiculous speed. And that coming from that, you know, that use of that wrestling background. But it's a weird thing to transition from a sport where you don't ever get hit to transition from a sport where you very might likely get knocked unconscious, at least in practice.
Yeah.
It's very likely one day you're going to get unconscious.
Wrestlers, what they bring generally to MMA is they're incredibly hard workers.
Yeah.
I wrestled in high school, and it was just – it's incredibly difficult, the training.
Yeah.
And they compete a lot. They compete a lot. A lot of tournaments. You know, a wrestler in the NCAAs will have like 40 matches in a year.
They have mental strength too because of the fucking weight cutting.
They're just used to competing. Yeah. They're used to cutting weight. They're used to
being miserable and hungry
and starving all the time.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. The problem they have is they have to adjust to getting hit.
Yeah.
And you know, there are certain wrestlers that never make that successful mental leap.
There's
also an
issue with overtraining, and that's a real issue with wrestlers. And you know, it's like this whole willingness to push it farther than the next man, and the pain is just weakness leaving your body.
Yeah.
That's all well and good, but the reality is you should probably be paying attention to your heart rate. You should probably know, is it up 5 beats today from yesterday? Yeah, well, you're overtraining, dude. Why don't you piss in that cup? Oh, you're dehydrated. Look what's going on here, dude. You don't have minerals in your body. You don't have, like, the wrestling mentality is like, shut up, pussy. Get up, put on your fucking Converse All-Stars or run up hills.
And get in there.
Yeah, and get in there. And that's good and it's bad. It's good if you're super honest about what's going on, but bad if you know, you're not, and you don't pay attention to signs of overtraining.
How old, in wrestling, before MMA, when wrestling was just wrestling, how old did people wrestle? You didn't get out of your mid-20s, generally speaking. So you can have that mentality because you only did it till you're 25.
Yeah.
The problem is you take that to MMA, where you could do it till your mid-30s, Randy Couture to 40.
Yeah.
You can't maintain that.
How about it's Bernard the mentality fucking Hopkins, man?
Oh, my God.
How do I explain that?
Because you know what it is? You know what it is? I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
The dude is tech. I've never seen him get hurt.
Right.
I've seen, I don't know how many Bernard Hopkins fights since way back in the day. His first fight with Roy Jones, okay?
Right.
The guy is technically so good that he hasn't gone through the things physically a lot of fighters have gone through. He hasn't.
Did Chad Dawson drop him?
I don't think Chad Dawson ever dropped. I didn't see the fight. I don't think he ever dropped him, unless I'm mistaken. I don't think Chad Dawson ever dropped him. Just outworked him. I mean, it's easy to do when you're 45 or how old he is.
When it's at this
now, there's some
48, dude.
Yeah.
He's 48.
Yeah.
He's fighting soon. I think he's fighting in March.
There's something I want to talk to you about. I want to ask you.
Okay.
As a commentator.
Okay.
Because we interview thousands of fighters.
Yeah.
Okay, thousands.
Sure,
okay?
Yeah.
There's something I call the heart myth, which is, in interviews, we ask a fighter, you know, I've had fighters cry. They wanted something so badly. I want this so bad. They literally cry. They literally break down in front of us. They go in there. They take on a guy who's just better than they are, and they lose.
Yeah.
I was at Rodrigo Vaghi Jiu-Jitsu down in Missouri. I was picking up a car, and I was just like, hey, Rodrigo Vaghi's here. And, you know, I was doing some jiu-jitsu with them. And all these guys are there, and they go, what would you tell a guy getting ready for MMA? And I go, be technically sound. Listen to your coaches and make sure you have all the tools to win. And they all kind of sat there and they were quiet for a second. They went, I thought you'd give some speech about heart. And I go, I've seen guys with a heart without technique makes a beating more interesting.
Yeah.
Because a guy's still getting up when he's getting tattooed.
Absolutely.
And I go, if you aren't technically sound, like Bernard Hopkins probably beat a lot of guys with more heart than he had. Floyd Mayweather beats a lot of guys with more heart than they have because they are technically sound.
Yeah.
They're really sound. And yeah, heart's important, and you can't overstate the importance of heart. But guys who go, yeah, I'm tough, I got heart. I go, yeah, that can make a beating a lot more interesting if you don't have the technique to go with it. And Bernard Hopkins is a great example of that, of a guy who is just technically really, really sound and had a long, great career because of it. You know, I mean, people think that somehow my heart's going to overcome a guy who put in more work and is more technical than I am. And it rarely works. It works often enough that it's developed this myth of that you can outwork these guys. And, you know, if he's in shape and he has good technique, that is really, really hard to do. And it's something I notice over and over again in fighting. A guy can be motivated as shit. If you didn't have the technique and you didn't put in the work, it is not going to help you.
Yeah, it'll happen now and then if you catch a guy who's out of shape or a guy who's got a weakness in his game, like a striking weakness in his game, maybe he's more technical in grappling and you have more heart, you take it to him. But a guy who's technically sound across the board, you're absolutely right.
It can expose the other guy's lack of preparedness. That's what heart does. It exposes the other guy's lack of preparedness because, you know, the first one, Shogun was not prepared for that fight.
Yeah.
He just wasn't physically prepared. And what happened in the rematch? Shogun was prepared and blasted for it. So that's probably the biggest heart in the whole game. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where I think a lot of people, and you know, it's a great story. This guy with this big heart defeated this guy. And I said, hey, look, guys, be technically sound first before anything else.
I think you're dealing with two different forests, too.
There's a
difference of several fights.
And forest fights.
Yeah, forest fights.
Forest fights.
You know, Forest is known for having the most exciting fights maybe in the UFC history. The most important exciting fight in the history of the UFC was Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin, the finals of the Ultimate Fighter. Because for folks who haven't seen it, it's a real classic. I watched it again recently because it was just, I don't know what I was doing, but I saw it was, you know, I have a bunch of them DVR'd, and I watched that fight, and I was like, wow, at the time, it was so crazy. Like, we knew it was going to be a good fight, but when they got in there, they just went off. It was just chaos, and they were so evenly matched. They had trained together for so long, they knew what the fuck each other did, and they just went after each other for three glorious rounds.
Made MMA, modern MMA.
You can't do that forever. You know, that's not the smartest way to fight. The smartest way to fight is to be technical and to choose your spots. And although I appreciate for sure from a point of view of like a spectator, like a fan who loves to see chaos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I appreciate the fuck out of the fact that they did it, you know, and it was
the Chris Leavens of the world are great to watch. Yeah. Well, I'll pay to watch that guy, you know, anytime.
Yeah. Anytime.
Yeah. Anytime.
Yeah, Chris Leavens is always going to be, but I think Chris is not the right example anymore because he's gotten a lot more technical over the years.
He has, he certainly has.
Like, especially if you go back to, like, the Aaron Simpson fight.
Yeah.
Like, he fought very smart in that fight. You know, his last fight wasn't his best fight, the Derek Brunson fight, but, you know, he got, you know, just, he had a... He had at least a year off, you know, and he had substance issues and a bunch of other shit going on. So I don't know. But Chris Leben is always one of the most exciting guys. He's one of those guys that he might not ever be the champion. He might not ever be able to beat Anderson Silva. I will pay to see that guy fight any day of the week. Yeah.
Anytime you'll pay. You know, what everybody forgets, you know, and you know, we deal with a lot of people that don't understand the nature of the business. We're in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
We are in the entertainment business. And fighters like Forrest Griffin and fighters like Chris Leben and the Michael Chandler for us, the guys that go on there and just put it on the dude and are just a fireball from beginning to end, that's what people tune in for.
Dude, that's what they're for. Chandler guy is
beast.
Very exciting, man.
Beast.
He goes off.
I did not expect that at all.
He's an intense human being. Like, you see when he's talking, you know, he's got a lot going on behind the eyes.
He's just getting started.
Yeah.
That's the scary part.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, I was super impressed with him in that Eddie Alvarez fight. That was sick. Incredible performance.
I thought he was done at the end of the third round.
Did you really?
I was like, because that third round, Eddie starts teeing off. Chandler looked out of gas. I was like, okay, this is probably great performance. This is probably it. He came out in round four like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah,
and Eddie just was not ready for it.
He's a bad motherfucker.
Bad dude.
There's so few of those guys that like have this special thing about them, and you see them come up, and you go, well, this guy just for whatever reason he just stands out.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, what percentage of it is it? You know, is it 1% of all the fighters? I mean, what is it? What percentage that you see when you see a guy and you go, there's something that this dude has that other people just don't have?
5%.
Yeah,
I would go as high as 5%. But you and I have seen it where even if it's like just getting started, you're like, keep an eye on that dude.
Yeah, yeah.
That dude's got it. First time I saw GSP, Carl Parisian, I went, all right, this dude is going to be a problem.
I was at a lot of GSP's early fights, and I was there when he fought Jay Heron. That's when I knew. I was like, wow, this guy is fucking savage, man. He's a savage.
But the first one that I knew he was good, the one that really turned my head, when he demolished Frank Trigg.
Yeah.
When he demolished Frank Trigg, you went, okay. Because Trigg at the time was a top contender. It only lost to Matt Hughes and Hayato Sakurai, and was like, he just mauled him.
Yeah, GSP, wasn't even there. He ran through him. He just put up a pace that Frank Trigg, especially when it got to the ground, he just manhandled him.
Yeah.
I think Trigg was like really shocked.
Yeah.
And I remember when he got off of him, Trigg said, you're really fucking good, man. You're really fucking good. He was just shocked. Yeah, there's a few of those guys. Like when Anderson first came into the Octagon, when he fought Chris Lieben, I knew. I had seen him fight many times.
Yeah.
And I'd seen his difference between his Pride days, where he was still learning submissions and his Muay Thai wasn't exactly where it was then, to the Cage Rage days when he went over to England. Is it Cage Rage?
Cage Rage, England, yeah.
In Cage Rage when he fought Lee Murray and he fought Tony Fricklin, he hit him with that upward elbow.
Yeah.
It was a stepping forward upward elbow.
Like I missed, he pretended to miss the hook and then reloaded and hit him with
and
the elbow.
Blam! And caught him on the chin and knocked him completely unconscious. And I knew that Anderson was something special. I knew that he was coming into his own, especially the Lee Murray fight. Because Lee Murray, who went on to be one of the most notorious criminals in UK history.
I think they're making a movie about it.
Of course
I'm
they
sure,
are.
From what I've heard, they're making
a movie.
How could you not? MMA fighter turned
he was a legend.
Biggest heist in
English
history at the time.
Apparently, the story goes that he met Tito Ortiz in London back when Tito was the champ. And he either didn't know who Tito was or didn't give a fuck who Tito was. And they got in a street fight. And the word is that Lee Murray won the street fight. That was like what everybody had said. And then, even after Tito lost to Chuck in the post-fight interview, he was, talking about how this 185-pounder was running his mouth.
Talk shit.
Yeah, this is after he just fought Chuck Liddell and got stopped. He was, calling out Lee Murray. So it was a legit beef. Something happened for sure. And then he went from there to getting somehow or another involved in this insane armed robbery, like right out of a
movie.
Like
a Statham movie.
Yeah, where they have like masks on and machine guns and they held hostages and they stole millions and millions of dollars. And then
one of the biggest heists in British history.
Yeah. And then he went to Morocco. And then in Morocco, he got arrested for, I think it was like cocaine and kidnapping.
Something ridiculous.
You would think.
Like how many years can I add on to my sentence here? Let me see. Let's take a look at it here.
You would think, okay, I'm on the run from the biggest armed robbery in the UK history. I got this fat bag of money with me. What do I do?
I'm out. Yeah. I never understand. And there's a great Cocaine Cowboys. You ever seen it? Great documentary. Okay.
Yes. Billy Corbin.
Billy Corbin.
I met that guy in Florida. Great guy.
One thing I kept thinking as I was watching that movie, and by the way, listeners, if you haven't seen Cocaine Cowboys, great documentary. Check it out.
Amazing. And two. One and two.
Right. There's two. And these guys make hundreds of millions of dollars. Close on. At what point do you go, out, done, I'm not risking a life sentence over this. I have $50 million. Can I budget in my head? Okay, yeah, I can live on this.
Well, I think in Lee Murray's case,
I'm done.
I don't think that you could spend the money. I think they take the money and it becomes like they know what the numbers on the money were, and then they put that into circulation, like be alerted for these numbers.
Why don't you get a legit job and go, I'm going to be a mortician, whoever I have to be in Morocco, to not go to prison for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I would rather be a mortician in Morocco.
I got lucky.
But
I'm
being
out.
In jail in Morocco, I think he gets like girls in there because
sure
he got
does.
A chick pregnant.
Well, he's hooked up there. That's why he ran there. His family's Moroccan. I guess they got some juice in Morocco.
Yeah.
So I don't. Maybe he's doing one like the Pablo Escobar prison in Colombia. That's like a compound.
I don't like the idea of supporting criminals.
Neither do I.
But I do like the idea that there's a place you can go where jail's not really jail, and you can pay some people off and just live like they did.
That's the rest of the world, bro. That is the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think I like.
I've been all over the place. It's the rest of the world, man.
I don't really think that, you should be using it in a bad way. I don't think corruption should be used in a bad way. But when it's used that way, when a guy can get a dope cell because he's paying for it, they can bring in girls. I don't really hate it, I mean, look, a fucking security guards got to do what security guards got to do. Mm-hmm. It's a tough way to make a living.
Oh, isn't it?
So I don't mind him getting a few extra $100 if he brings in hookers for Lee Murray. I really don't see a problem with that.
The unions in California, it's really hilarious. Here in California, the prison guard union is one of the most powerful unions in California. Every time they try to do any kind of, well, can we search guards before they go in there? Or something, because guards are making huge money.
Yeah.
Get old cell phones and give them to the prisoners and so they can do their thing. They stop it every single time.
I'm glad they do.
Every single time.
I'm glad they do. And because if they know they're all corrupt and they know they're all sneaking weed in, and that's okay. The fuck, man. You know, there needs to be a little room for fuckery in this world. Everything can't be.
I had a friend tell me cigarettes $20. What's the prison he was in, a cigarette is $20. A cigarette.
One cigarette is $20.
Imagine being a guard and bringing in a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
And making that kind of money.
Worth every penny.
Yeah, Brian would pay it.
Worth every penny.
He would give you that money. You would, wouldn't you, right?
Probably. Just have one cigarette.
Yeah, just a cool. You'd be down one a day. Could you deal with like a $100 cigarette habit a week? Could you deal with one cigarette a day, or would you just go crazy?
I'd probably have like two hits, put it out, two hits the next day, put it out. So I would make it last like a...
Like a wino. You're like a crazy
person. Wow, that's like serious addiction.
How many are you smoking a day these days?
About a pack.
Are you worried about, like, when you hear that our friend Duncan gets cancer, you know, and he's basically your age, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's going through radiation and all this shit? Does that freak you out at all?
Well, I don't put cigarettes up my ass or anything. Like
hey,
that.
Easy. Ooh. What are you trying to say about Duncan?
Wow, making this all personal.
Fuck, talking shit about a fucking injured person.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get nervous, but...
Doesn't freak you out at all? You don't give a fuck?
What else is bad that I do, you know? I drink, you know, I do drugs, I smoke, whatever.
So you just don't give a fuck about your meat vehicle? You're just going to ride that shit until the wheels fall off? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess, yeah. You know, everybody's got their own decisions to make in this life.
It's really hard to be a comedian and go to a comedy club and not drink. It's really hard to be a comedian and go to a comedy club and not smoke. It's like almost impossible.
Well, it's more fun if you do those things. That's the problem. You know, you're hanging out with comedians and you want to drink, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody pulls out a joint.
Yeah, little known fact, I've never had a drink in my life.
Really?
Little known fact about Jimmy Smith.
How come?
Parents are both alcoholics.
Oh, good
dad's
move.
Dad's real bad. Was real bad.
Good move. Yes. You might have that fucking
wacky gene.
Yeah,
man, I was like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
Just in case, I'm going back off this.
That's the reason why I've never tried cocaine. I get a chance to watch, no one in my family, but I had a chance to watch some friends lose their fucking shit over it. It's good, smart to learn, you know. I'm not saying that everybody should have an alcoholic in their family, but you should... You should really know the broad spectrum of how bad something can fuck up your life.
You know the show Intervention?
Yeah.
On Annie? My wife's a producer, and she produced Intervention for like a year and a half. She worked for the production of Intervention. Mm-hmm. The story she would tell me about these addicts, and it's what's weird is the inconsistency of it, where some addicts will do one drug and it doesn't really do, it's okay, whatever, but coke is their thing. Or, why are... systems or our brains key into a particular drug and go, and they can't get off whatever it is.
Yeah,
is you know, it's really weird how some people are hardwired for that and other people aren't. Mm-hmm. I don't really have an addictive personality. The only thing I'm really, you know, I love fighting, I love training.
Right,
you know, that's
more
I've
of a passion.
Really,
than
it's more
an
of a passion, but you know, you could call it a physical addiction to some degree, but. You know, it's weird what keys into certain people, how some people get hooked on something, other people have no problem with it.
I think there's a lot of genetic variables.
A ton.
Yeah, especially when it comes to, I mean, it's the oldest running, you know, story in America, really, from the dawn of the Pilgrim days. It was the Indians and their inability to handle alcohol. It is the American and Native Americans have consistently had a problem with alcohol. And the idea is that genetically their bodies are not designed to process it because it wasn't a part of their culture until the white man showed up.
Yeah.
So it was this massive
Polynesians
disadvantage.
Too. I grew up in Long Beach, a lot of Samoans.
Yes, yes.
Last thing you want is a family of drunk Samoans.
Yeah, you're right.
After you.
You're right.
They love me. I have a lot of Samoan friends, so I'm cool. But man, they roam in packs of families and...
Yeah, well, I find they're generally very friendly people.
Unbelievably friendly.
Very, very family oriented. Yeah, just don't be cunty with them.
Don't be cunty.
They won't have to SWAT you.
Yes.
But, you know, the cultural lack of history with alcohol really fucks them up, man. Really, it can. There's some. And then there's cultural history of, like, fucking straight alcoholism, like a lot of Irish folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of.
And my dad was half Irish.
There you go. Yeah, I have a good buddy whose dad was Irish and drunk. Greg Fitzsimmons. He's told the story 100 times. and about how his dad, you know, fucking crashed a car while he was drunk, and then, you know, like, was in the hospital for a while, and then got out of the hospital and, like, almost immediately started drinking again.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't make.
It's like, wow.
My dad went through DTs while driving one time. My mom said, he was driving. I apparently hadn't had anything to drink in the morning, which is weird. I don't know what he was thinking. But anyway, my mom said, you were in the backseat. You know, we were there, and he started shaking, and he started shaking, and he pulled the car over, and he started convulsing. And a cop came and said, do you need help? Does he need to go to the emergency room? Because he was having convulsions because he didn't drink that morning.
Whoa.
So it's like, you know.
One day?
Yeah.
That's all it
one
took?
Morning, bro. One morning. I saw him. He had a head injury, which is how he. Well, not really how he died, but he had a head injury, and he was in the hospital one time. I went to visit him, and they had him tied to the bed, and he's, like, thrashing around, and his eyes are rolling back. He's literally in a coma, but DTs will go through him anyway. It doesn't – your body is still reacting to the fact that you don't have any alcohol. So he's thrashing around, and he's screaming and all this stuff, and I'm looking down at him, and I forget who I'm with, and they went – can you believe this? I turn around and go, this is why I don't drink. You see that? You want to take a picture of this? Because this is why I don't drink. And she was like, yeah, I can see why you don't drink, because – your body will go through DTs anyway, whether you're in a coma or not, you know? So, yeah, that kind of stuff, you know? So it's like, I just
stay away from
that. What's wrong with people? I don't know.
That design, a shit design. Yeah. That you can get hooked on alcohol or heroin or something that sucks, something that's bad for it.
And something like working out, it's a pain in the ass for people, and they don't want to do it.
Well, you know what? For some folks.
For some people. I'm addicted to it. I love it.
I can't stay away from it. I can't go a couple of days without some sort of training. It makes me feel better. Yeah. You know, I'm suffering through a bulging disc right now, and I started getting Rolfing. You ever had Rolfing done?
Oh, thank God, no. God I have not.
Very painful. But it's really amazing at, like, what kind of pain relief it gives you once the pain is over.
Yeah.
Like, the loosening of my back. Like, my back feels more limber than it's felt, like, in, like, a year. Like, I've had an issue with my back for quite a while. I could get injured.
My neck is bad, yeah.
You have bulging?
Yeah, I think so.
So, did you get an MRI or anything? Did you get checked out?
No, I just got – this is years ago when I was at Teen Punishment. Some dude dropped me on my head, and I bulged, herniated, slight herniation here.
Yeah.
And I had therapy for like 6 months, and they went, okay. And this is back when I didn't have any money, so I had to have a friend of mine, a chiropractor, take care of it. But it was like therapy, and it fixed it, but it's the one thing where I'll be sparring, I'll take one, and I'll feel this, and I got to stop.
Right.
Because if I keep going, then I got to put ice on it and all that stuff. It's just always a problem, a slight problem.
So you do still have a bulge there, probably. Yeah. And it'll press against the nerve.
Yeah. If I get hit on the head.
Mm-hmm.
It jammed my head.
That happened to Mark Coleman. Apparently, got paralyzed. He was training with Randleman again, and Randleman dumped him on his head, and he couldn't move for like I think it was something crazy, like 30 seconds. Oh, like his body was just completely frozen.
That's a scary 30 seconds.
Oh my God! Where he thought this is it? I'm going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life, directing myself with my mouth. You know, I mean that's what could have happened to him, going from the UFC heavyweight champion of the world to that from one injury like that. But
James Wilkes retired because of that.
Did he?
Yeah, he was a guy that I fought. Actually, when I was fighting, I fought James Wilkes, and he had some kind of herniation in his neck, and the doctor said, if you keep doing this, you're going to risk paralysis, and when I'm out.
Yeah, there's different ways to treat it. You know, the Rolfing, though, was a buddy of mine from the gym had good personal experience from it, and he was like, it is really painful stuff, but when it's done, like when they're breaking the muscle, like the muscle fascia, I guess, they're ripping it off, you know, the scar tissue, whatever they're doing with their elbows, it's fucking horrifically painful.
They put all their weight on it.
Yeah, but when it's done, like, man, like all of a sudden, like there's all this range of motion that wasn't there before, and I try to say, like, is this fuckery, man? Is this like some bullshit voodoo that they put on me, and then, you know, they're giving me a rubber bracelet with a hologram on it and saying it's going to make my balance better? But I think objectively, I'm just like, no, there's some serious relief in, like, I'm pretty consistent about like deep tissue massage and all the different things, chiropractic care, but this made a difference. Like, it was a noticeable difference.
A fighter is always in pain.
Yeah.
And people who have never fought or never trained don't understand that. Like, you know, basically any athlete, you know, basketball players, their knees are shot.
Yeah.
I go, it's they're constantly in pain. And the difference between hurt and injured is a line a fighter is always walking. A fighter never goes in not hurt, ever. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Yeah, that is they're always in pain. Thing is, you know, a lot of guys train through injuries, and that's why how I fucked my back up way worse. It's like I injured it, and then I was like, yeah, just keep rolling. I'll just go technical. I'll roll light. I'll tap quicker. You know, I won't put myself in strength. bullshit. Once you get out there, you start rolling.
You start doing it.
And you know, the whole purpose of rolling is to try to get dudes. And if they're trying to get you and you can't try to get them, it's not fun.
Nope.
You know, so you're not going to enjoy it. And the reason why you're doing it in the first place mostly is because it's fun.
Yep.
So you're going to go after him and you're going to, fucking shit.
Go home.
Yeah.
It's done.
I had like numbness in my hand. And I would get this pain in my elbow.
Same thing I got.
The ulnar nerve. It's like C7 or something like that, where your injury is?
It's here.
That's a really scary one, getting dropped on the head.
Sucks.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I like that jiu-jitsu starts on the knees. The bad thing is that, you know, a lot of guys don't have good takedowns or takedown defense. And if you face a wrestler, you're really fucked if you can't take him down and he's better standing. You know, because then you're doomed. You're just gonna get teed off on.
It's easy to defend submissions if you've been grappling your whole life. It's just a natural thing for them. It's really hard. I hate, you know, catching a wrestler sucks.
But man, getting tossed around is one of the easiest ways to get fucking seriously hurt. When you're wrestling with really good guys who can throw you, you know, guys who can they get double unders on you and they fucking suplex you legit in the gym where they're launching their back like a fucking bridge, you know, and slamming you into the ground first with them behind you, all 200 plus pounds of them. You can get really fucked up, like separated shoulders, terrible disc injuries. So I don't fuck with that, man. I know it's an important thing to do, to like roll with a guy like that, to know what's possible, but the worries about getting slammed on your head, to me, that's a big one. That's a gigantic one.
The most injuries I've ever seen in combat sports, judo.
Oh,
judo is like, and it's funny because people don't think about it. It's like, man, that doesn't seem like it would be the worst. People get thrown and their elbows pop out, their knees pop out, they fall. I mean, world champs.
Yeah.
Yoshida broke his arm in a tournament because, and that's a world champ.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu, you don't see that often. Like, hardly ever will a guy, you know.
Occasionally a guy will get an arm broke.
Occasionally.
He doesn't tap.
But they typically know when to tap. Yeah. When you get thrown, you're not
that
expecting
classic
it.
Classic Jacare Hodja Gracie fight where he didn't tap.
Tucks it in his
he
belt
let him,
fighting.
He let him break his fucking arm, and then he got out of it and won by points.
I could not believe that. I trained with Jacare. It's like being in a washing machine.
Dude, but how, what is his mentality? He let a dude break his arm in a jiu-jitsu tournament. Where is he gonna? What is he gonna win in that? $100? I mean, what the fuck is he gonna win? How much does a jiu-jitsu tournament pay? I mean, is it at $20,000? What's it worth to get your fucking arm
absolutes
snapped?
Final match of the absolutes, dude.
Stuffed in there, and this is after he'd already won his division and just defended for the last few seconds.
Big deal for him. Big deal for him, man.
He's a beast.
Dude's a beast.
That's a serious competitor, man. A guy who lets you break his fucking arm.
And just says, fuck it, I'm going to keep fighting. Well, here's one thing. Here's one mentality. Here's one thing you can say, though, is there is the idea of, well, fuck it, it's already broken. I got a minute and a half. Remember, there wasn't a lot of time left. It was like a minute and a half left of a 10-minute match. And he went, it's already broken. It's not going to get more broken.
Yep.
Fuck it. Maybe I can win this thing. It's not the kind of thing where it's like an MCL goes out and you're like, if I stand on this, it's, you know, going to get even worse. Fuck it. Broken's broken. Yeah. It ain't going to get a whole lot worse. And went, I got a minute left and made it.
Yeah.
That was the mentality of, man,
I can't
break it twice, I guess.
But
you
then
can.
The real problem is when a guy gets a physical injury like that, like you get an arm snapped or a knee snapped, you might not ever be the same again.
Nope.
And you might have to go through rehab for 7 months, 8 months, if you're lucky, if everything goes perfect, if you can schedule your surgery in time and then go through it all. It's like, that's why everybody's terrified of guys like Husamar Palhares. Husamar Palhares gets a hold of your leg and starts rolling, and I think he's my height and a foot wider than me. You know, I mean, I don't know how much weight he cuts to get down to 185 pounds, but he literally looks like a cartoon figure.
He's from my team, Carlson Gracie. You know, he's Manuel Bustamante's, and I'm with Hey Diogo, who is, you know, the same family and stuff. And the dude is one of those guys where it's like, are you okay? Or like, is jiu-jitsu all you do? Because it's like, if you saw in Abu Dhabi and he took on, Marcos Avalon, I want to say, had him in a heel hook. They roll out of bounds.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he keeps rolling. And they're like, we're out of bounds. And he taps.
And he knew that Marcos Avalon was lightening up because they were out of bounds. And he just went for the kill and tried to submit him.
But he stood up like,
oh, good match.
And yeah. Marcus Abraham is furious.
Well, then remember they restarted him. They restarted him with a heel hook.
And he taps him
and he said, ready, go. You can't do that. Uh-uh. You can't because there's a lot of momentum in moving, and you generate that momentum to say, stop, ready, go. That's a big advantage to the guy that was applying the submission.
Done.
Like you allowed him to get to a superior position because that initial explosion is way quicker to do with your arm like that than it is to do with your leg and twisting your fucking foot that's already in a bad spot.
Yeah.
You know, ready, go. You gotta...
But it's the idea of Marcus Abraham is clearly upset.
Yes.
And Toquinho's like, oh, yeah, good match.
And
it's
he
like,
slapped
are you,
him
are
hard.
Are you paying attention?
He slapped him hard when he went to hug him. Like, he hit him.
Which match did he jump up on the fence before the fight was over?
Oh, that was like, Jim Miller.
That
not Jim Miller. Dan Miller.
Dan Miller. It's that combination of, you know, sick on the ground and not all there upstairs is frightening.
Yeah, he's a nut.
Frightening.
And he's been a leg snapper forever.
Years.
Yeah, he's... If you've never seen him, he's this hairy gorilla type man, and his technique is flawless. He's so
perfect.
Strong, but his technique is perfect. There's a video online with him rolling with Mayhem in Brazil, and he takes Mayhem down, like smoothly passes him, takes his back, and then transitions to the armbar, all in one glorious move. And you watch him, you go, God damn, that guy's just fluid, like water. I mean, the way he ducked under Mayhem, scooped him, dumped him, just took his back, took the armbar, you're like, well, I know Mayhem, man. Mayhem is no joke.
I used to train with
Mayhem.
Him,
has a very good ground game. He's got very good defense.
Yeah.
He survives a lot of shit. And to see that guy run through him like that, you're like, ooh.
Wasn't even there.
Yeah, he's a bad motherfucker, but...
No plan B. That's the problem. No plan B.
The Hector Lombard fight was a terrible matchup for him because Hector Lombard is so fucking powerful with
ridiculous.
His hands.
Yeah.
And Hector's takedown defense is ridiculous. When you see the Tim Boach fight, it wasn't a good fight for Hector. It was one of his worst fights ever. But look how good his fucking takedown defense is. I mean, he sprawls and slams Boach down to the ground with him. That is a power sprawl. When he gets those, you know, when Boach shot in on him and he over-undered him, kicked his hips back and drop the two of them down to the ground, you're like, whoa, that is some otherworldly strength.
That's another dude who's like 5 foot nothing and like 6 feet wide.
He's like 5'7", 5'8", and just built like a fucking comic book hero.
Yeah.
And his movement, like the shit that he can do to people, you know, he is striking, the explosions that he could put on people.
Yeah.
He's just a ridiculous athletic specimen. Josh Barnett said that he taught him muscle-ups, you know, that he had never done it before. Which a muscle-up is, you start with a chin-up, and then you pull yourself up to your chin, and then you push yourself all the way up to, like, a dip. So you're fully extended. And he said, like, it's hard to do. Like, Alistair Overeem, they had one of those gymnastics dudes, like, street... You know the street workout dudes that do a lot of, like, crazy...
Yeah.
Core strength, athletic moves, and he couldn't do it. Hector Lombard just starts whipping him off. Bam, 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 bam. Just does like 10 muscle-ups in a row, which is impossible.
Dude's a freak.
Like, to never have done it before and just pull yourself up like that over and over again, you got to be unbelievably strong.
I've had people tell me that when he was at CSW, which is Josh Barnett's team here in Southern California, on Fullerton, they would, like, mop up the blood when they would spar.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because Hector does not know how to spar lightly.
He
doesn't know how to be, like... He just goes full out all the time. Josh Barnett, gigantic dude.
Well, there's a legendary story of Josh Barnett like punishing him, where he mounted him and would not let him go, and just kept beating him up because apparently there was an issue with Hector beating up other people in the gym. If you're sparring Hector, that's always been the knock, is that he's gonna fight you, you're fighting.
Yeah.
Like, he's so goddamn competitive and he's so fucking good. He needs to destroy, like, all the time. He's like this fucking destruction machine.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, he, like, even talks about it in post-fight interviews. One of the post-fight interviews, you know, my trainers say, you know, I have to be nice, or, you know, I can't have toys to play with.
You break your toys, you got no toys to play with, bro. Bro, that's what it is, bro.
That dude's, he's a scary guy.
He is, man.
I'm glad he's back on track. That Paul Harris fight put him back on track.
Certainly
there's so many exciting fights for him. You know, there's the thing about having only two promotions It's like, I mean, there's other like small feeder promotions that go
national. Let's say national promotions. Yeah. It's Bellator and UFC.
That's it. That's all there is now. I mean, especially now that Strikeforce is done. But there's so many guys that you go, damn, well, I want to see that guy over there. Like I would love to see Chandler fight Benson. I think that would be fucking
chaos. Be an awesome fight.
I would love that fight. I would love to see Pat Curran fight basically any 145 pounder in the world. He looked great
against Pitbull. It was a great fight.
Dude, he's got a great fight. And he's another one where really follows the principles of being technically sound.
Tight.
Doesn't expose himself, doesn't go emotionally, doesn't do anything crazy, but mixes things up really good, like between punches and knees that you don't see coming and kicks you don't see coming. No wind up with the kicks. You know, he's throwing a lot of kicks karate style that are getting there when you don't expect them to. He's a bad motherfucker. He's very good. That Sandro fight.
Dude,
when he head kicked him, I was like, oh, snap.
I did not see that coming at all.
Yes, Sandro's a beast standing, too. He's a dangerous fucking striker.
Knocked him dead.
Yeah. He's very, very, very good. There's a few of those guys, you know, that are, I see and I go, damn, I wish I could get that guy in the UFC. <You know?
laughs> I get to see him in Bellator, man.
I'm sure. Well, I hope that eventually they figure out some way where, you know, there can be, you know, like if it comes to a point where there's some Bellator heavyweight that is just the shit and just destroying people and it's all over television, if it gets to a point, ideally it would be great if there was like equal value. Because if it was equal value, then everybody would get together and say, listen, we got to promote, let's fucking make a deal. Come on, what are we doing here? This is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, let's chop this up and let's figure out a way to get the best fighters in the world fighting. But
the UFC, to its credit, is so the brand has been marketed so incredibly well, that the value behind the UFC brand is so high.
Yeah,
that's what it is. The brand behind the UFC is so high that brand is what's on the line. If they fight in the UFC, they're the best.
Yeah,
and that's what's on the line.
It's kind of crazy because when we first started, when I became a fan, the one thing that me and my friends sit around think that MMA needed, because a lot of folks don't know that in 1997. MMA was so underground. Most people had no idea what it is. And I always said, you know what? We need some like crazy billionaires that happen to be fight fans to just come along and buy it. But I never thought that was actually going to happen. And then it would actually be like some of the nicest fucking guys on the planet Earth. Like Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta are some of the nicest fucking human beings you could ever want to meet. They're gentlemen in every sense of the word. They're easy to talk to. They're friendly. They're kind. They're cool motherfuckers. And they love fights. They love boxing. They bet stupid money on boxing like all the time. They're big Floyd Mayweather fans, and they were big Ricky Hatton fans. And, you know, they love combat sports. It's always been a passion for them. And they also happen to own 20 casinos.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah,
that
so
helps,
it was like literally like we manifested them, like we created
good
them out of our
thank
imagination.
You, Joe Rogan. Thank you, Joe Rogan. I appreciate that, buddy.
We needed billionaires to come along. It's like it's almost like simulation theory. Like, you know, the universe provides you what your creative imagination is trying to concoct.
Right, exactly.
I don't know if
that's real. Whatever.
I don't really buy that, but I do buy that we were lucky as fuck to have the Fertittas come along, and they spent so much money to get the UFC to where it is before they actually started making money, that at one point in time they were thinking about quitting. They were like $40-something million in the hole.
That's what people don't people talk about MMA and UFC like it was a home run. That was of course it was going to be big. And
right,
it wasn't. They took and people that I don't understand who knocked the UFC and look, they took the risk and put the money in when it wasn't a home run. You know, when like you said, they were 40 in the hole.
And
at
they
one
did
point.
It super intelligently.
And they did
they created
it smart
the
and
brand.
Built it.
They built the brand up, and they got it to where it is, and they deserve every fucking penny they make from it.
That's exactly what I think.
That's that's reality.
Yeah.
You know, and the sport would not be here where it is right now if it wasn't for those guys. That's just a fact. If they didn't spend that money and take that chance, it had to get promoted. But it's amazing that it did. You know, it really is amazing. Like, I'm so psyched. We're going to Chicago this weekend, and fights on Fox.
Yeah.
And it's great fucking fights. You're going to have Rampage versus Glover Teixeira.
Yeah.
That's a great fucking fight. And then
Pettis versus Cerrone is what I'm looking forward to.
And Dodson. Yeah. Dodson is going to fight for the title.
Mm-hmm.
He's fighting Mighty Mouse. That's going to be a sick fight. That's going to be a fight. If folks can get past the fact that these guys weigh 18 pounds, Get past
yeah,
the fact.
Yeah. Get past the size.
These it's 125 pounds. They're the baddest motherfuckers on the planet Earth. Like pound for pound, no one moves like these guys. You want to talk about guys who are technical? Like Mighty Mouse is so fucking technical. He's yeah. so good at mixing up the takedowns with stand up, and his timing and his speed and delivery is sensational. And he comes from an interesting lineage to me, because I was just talking about his trainer Matt Hume the other day. There's very few guys
submission
that started
stud,
out, not just that, I mean, fucking
stud.
Basically
coaching
everything.
Stud. Yeah.
Coaching stud. But Matt Hume started out when MMA was, it was Pancration, and it was, I mean, he was literally in the just post-Hoist Gracie wave. And out of all those guys, whether it's the Lion's Den or whether it's, you know, the Miletich camp, all these camps that rose up from those ranks, Matt Hume has stayed ahead of the curve and continued to evolve his teaching and his game and his fighters to where the sport's at. Whereas, like, a lot of guys get stuck. They get stuck with a certain style. You know, there's the Hammer House style. There's yeah. the fucking Lion's Den style. And that style, as the sport becomes this sort of Rory McDonald, GSP-type athletic dominance sport, the guys who really continue to advance are rare. The guys who make it from that early pioneer age where Matt Hume was fighting. Like,
yeah.
If you go back and look at Matt Hume fought Pat Miletich way before Pat Miletich ever won the UFC title.
Broke his nose
with a knee. Matt Hume was very, very technical. Stand up and had good ground game. He submitted Kenny Monday
yep.
in one of those submission only matches.
Yeah, that was something yeah. called the Contenders. I want yeah. like it was called like. God, what the hell was it called?
That was a
Contenders or something. It was some pay-per-view grappling thing.
Frank Shamrock submitted Dan
Henderson. Dan
Henderson
with a heel hook, yeah. inverted heel hook. Yep.
Yeah, that was nasty. There was a lot of interesting, and Dan Gable gave commentary on
yep.
it as well. I think it was Peretti. Was it Peretti? Was Peretti involved?
I don't remember.
That's
I remember the matches, yeah. but I don't remember who's doing
commentary. I was hoping that would actually become something that people could watch, because I think there's something cool about watching like really aggressive submission grappling. You know, if you watch a Marcelo Garcia, you watch a Jacare or a Jake mm-hmm. Shields, someone who really goes after the finish, mm-hmm. and you know, to see that on television, I think would be really interesting for people.
But that's the part that we have the most trouble translating when we're talking
yeah.
about MMA.
Yeah,
that's the part where
true.
People start booing and all, you know. And
yeah.
I'm seeing something awesome and crowds booing and you know.
But they're dumb. They're
that's,
dumb.
Yeah.
That's okay. It doesn't matter. You can't make everybody happy.
They're dumb. You can't. It's but like, what I'm saying is, MMA, which has a ton of action and some grappling, the grappling is the part we have. People have the least attention span with something that's all grappling. That's a hard sell. They tried to do with the real pro wrestling, which Kenny Johnson, a guy
yeah, but there's
with,
no
tried to
finishing
do.
In that.
There
See,
isn't.
I think
there isn't.
The difference, I think, is in the submission.
Who watches Abu Dhabi? I mean, guys like us.
Yeah, but they
submission
don't promote
dorks.
It. I mean,
submission
it's
dorks.
Online, but it's yeah. not like it's in you know on ESPN. It's not like it's in the front of Sports Illustrated. Who's the best strangler on the planet Earth? You know, I mean, I think that's something that's missing. I think there's two things that are missing, and I think high level kickboxing is the other one. I think like
yeah.
high level kickboxing, like K1. Like I know Glory just put on a pay per view event. I think they're going to do something in America this year, and they're throwing a lot of money at
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
They might be able to pull it off. I wasn't down with their last thing because they had like I watched it. I bought the pay per view, but it was four fights in a night. I was like, that's crazy. And they were making the guys fight 2 minute rounds, four
yeah.
fights, 2 minute rounds.
That was the one out of Japan, right? Was that in Japan? Because they had a New Year's Eve show.
I believe it was
yeah.
in Japan. It was yes, it was, because it was in combination with Dream.
Yeah.
They did both of them back-to-back in the same place. And it was incredible. I mean, it was really fucking good fights. But to see Daniel Gita in the final round against Semi Schill just exhausted, having fought three fucking tough fights. And the third fight was against that big giant dude. I forget the fucking guy's name, but he's 300 pounds, 6'8". He's a bad motherfucker. And he beat up Bonjasky. So it's mm-hmm. like... these guys are going through unbelievable punishment before they ever get to the final fight. I would way rather see individual super
An
fights.
An actual card.
Yeah, I don't like tournaments, man. I think it's stupid because I think it's unfair. If one guy wins in a 7-second
I won't
knockout,
take that personally. That's
yeah.
cool. To work in Bellator.
That's not what I mean.
It's cool.
Not
no,
tournaments
all right.
like
all right.
that.
You know, I'm good
I mean
it.
Tournaments where you fight multiple times in a night.
Yeah.
In the same night.
It's just
I
too
think,
many variables
yes.
that are just, who can go through that?
I like a tournament format where you build up to one final contender. I like that.
Right.
I like what Bellator
We're
does.
Cool then,
I like
right.
what K1 does. I like what Dream does.
Yeah.
But what I don't
Pride
like.
Pride used to do.
Yeah.
Pride had a couple in a night. They had the opening round, and they had two in one night.
It's interesting because you want to see what happens when Vanderlei meets, you know, Rampage, and you want to see what happens when they meet in the finals.
Too many variables. You know.
The reality is, if you fight more than one time a night, you could be really busted up and maybe concussed, especially if you're fighting Japan.
Oh my God!
They'd be like, "Oh, he's okay."
They don't stop anything, man.
Yeah, they will let you fight even if you're concussed. If you got concussed in your first fight and then you go out, they'll let you go out for the second fight.
I've had some people ask me about recently. Would a Muay Thai thing like Glory be successful in the United States? I think MMA may have paved the road where people are used to seeing Muay Thai and kickboxing in MMA and appreciating it and will obviously throw their dollars toward a good Muay Thai promotion. I think it can work, and I think, like I said, the MMA fans that have gotten used to that kind of striking, that's what paved the way. I think a few years ago it didn't work.
Yeah, I think people...
Because it never did in the United States. We've never been big on kickboxing.
Well, you know what it is? That PKA karate shit ruined it for everybody.
It did.
Because it was so bad. It was so
boring. It was awful.
It was so silly.
Don't watch that. If you guys are listening and don't know what we're talking about, good.
You can watch it just to learn.
Just to see what we're talking about.
They used to have this rule where you had to throw a certain amount of kicks in a round. So you had like these sloppy kicks, and then you had bad boxing. And you had like, I'm just going to be honest. They were inferior athletes. They just weren't that good. And no one ever looked at the best of the PKA guys and said, hey, that guy could fuck up Marvin Hagler.
Yeah,
you know, no one thought. You knew that Marvin Hagler was just going to jump all over him. They weren't in the same quality of fighter.
I saw some boxers who got into it for the money and literally went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I threw like six kicks to get the number they needed in the round, and then they boxed the rest of the round.
And then beat the guy's ass.
Yeah, and then beat their ass.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bad style because they didn't incorporate leg kicks and knees and elbows and all the things that make kickboxing and Muay Thai more interesting.
Yeah.
And once they started doing that, though, in Japan with K1, it became some of the most it went from being boring as fuck to some of the most exciting fights in the history of combat sports were fought in the K1 days of Japan, where most people have no idea they were even going on. Because in Japan, it was gigantic. They had Andy Hoog and Ernesto Hoost, and they put together, these Japanese are such bad motherfuckers. They put together these giant tournaments featuring the greatest kickboxers on earth and made them fight each other on multiple occasions.
And they always have one poor tiny Japanese dude in there, too.
Every now
that
and again.
That was the hilarious part to me, is the kind of freak show matches they used to put together. But K1 was the shit, man.
Yeah,
they
would put together some freak shows. Well, they put together Bob Sapp.
Yep.
Bob Sapp and Ernesto Hoost is the greatest freak show matchup ever.
I can't believe he lost him.
He won twice. Bob Sapp won twice
in a row.
And he had to come back. He had to come back. We played that fight, and we were fucking around doing color commentary on the show. Yeah. We're talking about what an amazing fight it was. Like, he dropped him with a fucking left hook to the body and hurt him bad. Like, mm-hmm. Bob Sapp was hurt bad. And Ernesto was chopping at his legs, but he was so big and so fucking strong that he won anyway.
Yeah. You know who Bob Sapp reminds me of when he goes down? Bald Bull. Do you remember the punch out? Bald Bull, his eye will, like, pop
Mike Tyson's
out. And he'll
punch
curl
out.
Up like this on his right side like that, and his eye will pop out. The dude looks like Bald Bull whenever he goes down.
That's fucked up. You say that because Crocop broke his eye socket. Remember that? He fucked his eye up, and then his eye looked weird after that. Remember?
Bald Bull, man. I'm serious.
That happens to dudes. They get that eye socket break, and then they develop that one weird eye because of that, and then they're still fighting. That's when you know shit's real.
When one eye moves, the other one doesn't?
Yeah.
That's the problem, yeah.
Did Murillo Ninja have brain surgery? What is the story with that?
I have not heard anything.
Because we know that you can have brain surgery and still fight today. You can have some things done that actually it's not even like they have to clean something up. Like I know Thiago Alves. Remember they had to insert like some crazy glue in his brain and had a weak something or another. There was some issue where they did like a microsurgery and then he was back to fighting like shortly thereafter, which is really hard to wrap your fucking head around. But they were inserting glue into his dome and then they're like, yeah, you're good to go. Get back out there and get fucking shinned in the head again.
All right, like we were saying before, that second generation, you're starting to go – so-and-so needs to hang that shit. And Babalu, not that Mohazai. It's time to pack him up. And it's hard for us who saw guys like that and worship guys like that.
Yeah, Babalu, for folks who don't know, has one of the scariest old school Vale Tudo knockouts ever. You remember Brad Kohler?
Yes.
Remember when he fought Brad Kohler? Brad Kohler, who had one of the best.
Who looked like a rhino.
Yeah, unbelievably muscular, solid dude. He had one of the best one punch KOs ever, and that was an example that we were talking about a wrestler being able to generate that same double leg takedown power into a punch, and that's what Brad did. I forget who the dude that,
was it a UFC? Tattoos on both of his arms. Was it UFC?
You sure it was UFC?
Brad Kohler?
Yeah,
definitely. It was. God, I can't remember his name. Tall dude, tattoos on both arms.
Yeah, he was really tatted up.
He was bouncing.
He was more of a jiu-jitsu guy.
Of a jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah, and he was trying to get a hold of him, and he got leveled. Well, Babalu manhandled that dude, then he soccer kicked him back in the soccer kick days, and Babalu soccer kicked him, like moved his whole body like a foot when he kicked him. It was it was one of the most brutal soccer kick KOs ever. And Babalu, that's when he like first emerged onto the scene, man. And he was a dangerous motherfucker. Still is, man. You know, he's been hit a bunch of times. He's been knocked out a bunch of times. But, you know, anybody could lose if they get caught with a spinning back fist like that. That dude spun around and blasted him right behind the jaw. I mean, that was a hard shot.
It was. And he was still up after that shot.
Yeah.
And it was
the
left hook that nailed him.
Yeah, he got dropped by the left hook. But, you know, he's been in there with so many guys. Like, think about, like, the Chuck Liddell, two fights with Chuck. You know, those were crazy fights.
The thing is that the losses Henderson. He has had have been some brutal-ass knockouts.
Yeah.
Two from Chuck, Gegard Mousasi, who's an animal.
Henderson is one of the most brutal. You know, when Henderson puts it on you, dude, that guy, that motherfucker has some of the most violent ground and pound. It's like he capitalizes on these openings in ways that a lot of guys don't. Like it's the suddenness to it. Like when he starts pounding on you, you usually don't get up from that. There's not a lot of guys who are going to absorb those shots and get up. Dan can put some serious fucking horsepower behind those knuckles, man. I was really bummed out when they had to stop the John Jones Henderson fight. I was really, really bummed out because especially during that time of his career when John is like still sort of learning all the different aspects of MMA. I mean, he's getting better every time you see him. But if there's ever an opening for a veteran, a real crafty guy like Henderson to capitalize on a mistake or to open a door by setting some traps and open a door for him to land a punch, Dan Henderson knows how to put that fucking hand on you. He knows how to do it. He might not be technical in the sense of like Cyril Diabate, who sets things up in that flowing.
Doesn't throw a wide variety of punches.
Yeah.
He has an overhand right and a good left hook.
But if he hits you, you're Foxville. And
you're going out.
And he does it in training a lot, too. It's not like. So he's developed a way that works with his body type, with his style of fighting, and with his wrestling ability. He's developed a way. You can't sleep on that. And I thought that was a very interesting first round, really, to see what kind of how the fight shapes up and whether or not John takes him down, if John gets on top of him and wears him out.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was wondering. Like, how would this play out? And would he get clipped coming in?
Yeah.
You know, Dan Henderson clips you. I don't care who you are. You got a really big problem on your hands. And that is a career changer.
It is.
That shit's a career changer. You know, like when he blasted out Fedor, everybody was like, holy shit.
That's it.
I mean, look, people have beaten Fedor, and Bigfoot even stopped him in between rounds, but it was a brutal, slow beatdown. Whereas Dan Henderson's was sudden and violent as fuck. He ducks under and clips him with an uppercut under his armpit and just starches him, just stiffens him up, and then boom, boom, a couple hammers to the side of the head, and it's over. I mean, when Dan gets you hurt, he fucking jumps on
And they're never the same.
Never the same.
A lot of the guys Dan Henderson fought, I think it was, I mean, Krokop probably beat the career out of Vanderlei, but after, in my opinion, after the Dan Henderson fight, when he lost his belt in Pride, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Vanderlei was never that old Vanderlei again, ever. Ever. I think Krokop beat the career out of him.
Krokop's beat the career out of him. KO. First of all, when they first fought Krokop beat his body up with some of the most vicious fucking left kicks to the body.
Remember that footprint? Yeah. His ribs. Yeah.
His whole ribs were lit up, but he was so inexperienced that his timing was a bit off. He was worried about the takedown. They even instilled some weird law, or rule rather, where you can only fight on the ground for like 30 seconds.
Yeah,
or
it was
some
old
shit.
Mix K1 thing. Yeah. Remember those old Mix K1s with Pride?
And the rule was that if no one got knocked out, it would be a draw.
Yeah.
So it wound up being a draw. But in the second fight, you saw Krokop where he'd have quite a few MMA fights and quite a few days in the gym working on his sprawl and his takedown defense. And that was when he was in his athletic prime.
At his best.
He was at his best. And when he fucking shinned him in the head, man, like, oh, Jesus. And you saw Vanderlei just go backwards with his arms up in the air, completely in dreamland.
That's it.
You're like, whoa, I didn't think we'd see Vanderlei like this.
When you see enough fights, especially with somebody with a long career like Vanderlei or even Krokop, any of the guys, you can always say one fight. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of go, that was it.
You know what I think?
That was the high point for him.
I think it's Mark Hunt.
Really?
I think Mark Hunt hurt him. And he lost that fight where he thought he won that fight. But
I thought he won that fight, too. I thought he won that
fight.
Yeah,
I thought he won it as well. But it was a close fight.
It was a close fight.
Mark Hunt hurt him.
Knocked him down a couple times.
And I think Mark Hunt took some of the wind out of his sails.
Really?
Because Vanderlei always thought of himself as a striker. And that was the first time he faced a guy who was like ridiculously pedigreed striker, K1 Grand Prix champion. Mm-hmm. And Mark Hunt, when they were standing, Mark Hunt was putting it on him.
Yeah.
And I think Vanderlei realized in his head, like, I'm not even close to the best striker on earth. And I think that fight shattered his confidence a little bit.
Without confidence, a guy like Vanderlei can't do anything.
Yeah, because that was the first fight where we saw him like consistently not able to do what he wanted to do with his stand-up and getting teed off on. He got tagged a couple of times.
Relied on his takedown a lot?
Yeah.
Which we never saw him
never
do before that.
He tried to turn it into an MMA fight, and we thought from Vanderlei that he would welcome a brawl. But he did not welcome a brawl with that guy. And I think that was one of those fights where, you know, you look at like a guy operating like Vanderlei did at so many RPMs. Like, the folks who've never seen Vanderlei's fights, his name's spelled Wanderlei, Wanderlei. And he was like ridiculously
The Axe Murderer was his nickname.
Yeah,
the aptly named. Yeah.
Is it Peretti that nicknamed him that?
I think so, yeah.
Peretti had a bunch of great nicknames.
Yeah.
But he, whoever it was that nicknamed him that, it was perfect because he would fight like a murderer. He would just come charging at you like a fucking animal. He scared the shit out of everybody. Being like, he was the most aggressive guy ever in a sport that's unbelievably aggressive.
From an aggressive camp.
Yeah.
Shootbox was known for that. And
he
was like the poster boy for Shootbox.
Yeah, he was, when he was in his prime, he was insane. If you want to watch him in his prime, watch Vanderlei Silva versus Quentin Jackson in Pride.
Yeah.
When you see Vanderlei Silva versus Quentin in the UFC, he'd already been flatlined a couple times.
Yeah.
Krokop had KO'd him. Dan Henderson had KO'd him. A fighter can only take so many shots to the head. There's only so many you have in you.
Yeah.
And Vanderlei eats up a lot of those in training. You know, like Vanderlei in training is going full blast.
That's the problem with that. With sometimes that shoebox mentality is you use all your juice up training, sparring with guys. This is, you know.
Yeah, they would KO each other in training.
It's like, ridiculous.
They had a bet to see who would win a fight for a pit bull. Vanderlei wanted to buy a pit bull from Shogun, and Shogun, you know, wanted too much money or whatever.
I heard this.
So
they
fought. Vanderlei knocked him out and took his pit bull. He knocked his friend out for a fucking puppy.
That's shootbox, man.
And even in, you know, to this day, Shogun even talks about, you know, that kind of training, that they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That kind of training is bad for the athlete. So Shogun is not participating in that kind of training much anymore.
I think harkening back to what we were talking about it's a sport of athletes now.
Yeah.
There's that, the intelligence
of
we are professional athletes and I want to have a long career to make money. It isn't so much the pride of the martial artist like it used to be, which has its ups and downs, but part of the good side is they're athletes and they think about their career and they think about the long term of training and rest, and that wasn't always a factor, needless to say.
That's,
you know, in a lot
also
of gyms.
The most important aspect of MMA for progress is analysis, objectivity, and intelligence, focus, dedication, hard work, and techniques. Having all those in place, you have to be able to analyze what you need to change and what you need to adjust and what you need to put in and what you need to take out. That's all technique. That's being technical. That's being intelligent. And when you get to a point where you're ultimately technical, like a guy like Anderson Silva, whose technique is so evolved and so far behind, or so far ahead of everybody, that he can do nutty shit, like stand with his back up against the cage and go, come on, come fight with me. And Stefan Bonner was so far beyond his reach with in terms of technique that Anderson can get away with that kind of shit. He'll stand right in front of you. And, dodge your obvious punches.
Craziness. There's a point every fighter goes to where you don't want to go. It's a dark place you got to face sometimes to know here's the best and here's where I am.
Yeah.
And I'm not there and I'm never going to be there. And that's how it is. And you see there are a lot of fighters. The whole point of fighting, any athletic competition, is to go, how good can I be at this?
Yeah.
How far can I get with everything I get? There's a point where you go this far.
Yeah.
The Anderson Silva's the best. And he's making me look like an idiot.
It's hard
I am
for
this
guys
far
to
below.
Adjust.
That's a hard thing to see.
Because it's physically, you know, like everyone likes to say, you can do anything you set your mind to. Yeah, sort of, unless John
kinda.
Jones is setting his mind to doing it too. And then
he ain't doing it alone, dude.
Guess what? You might not be able to do it because John Jones might fuck you up.
Yep.
You know, you could say, well, you want to be the champion. You can go and set your mind. Eh, John Jones is setting his mind to it too, okay? And he's way ahead of you on the physical curve. And that physical curve is so real.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the physical gifts to go along with the dedication and the athleticism and the training, most likely you're not going to be successful anymore.
Yeah.
Like this, we live in a different era now. It's not as simple. It's not as simple as the old days. But the key to getting anything out of martial arts is to maximize what you're personally capable of and maximize your human potential. It doesn't mean that everybody who gets into martial arts has to be a UFC or a Bellator champion. That's
right.
Fucking stupid. Like, that's crazy. So to think that, you know, it's sad that someone can't make a career as a UFC fighter. No, most people can't make a career as a UFC fighter. Not everyone can be champion.
Right.
Maybe you can, maybe you can't. Maybe it's a combination of you need to be prepared from the right point in your life in the correct way and managed in the right forms of competition so you experience defeat and you experience all the benefits of facing adversity. Or you might not. You might hurt your back. You know, you might fuck your knee up and you can't compete anymore. But you have to take whatever energy that allowed you to get very good at martial arts and use that in some other way and learn and let you've developed tools. You have a whole box full of shit that you've developed through overcoming adversity that the average person doesn't. And you can apply that to anything you want.
Your sporting life
is
6 to 10 years if you are real lucky. If you are
unless you're
lucky.
A Josh Barnett.
Unless you're a Josh Barnett.
Or Vitor.
Freaking forever. So, you know.
Vitor knocks out Bisping, and he started out
1997.
Yeah. 1997, and he's still at the top of the game.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
A long prime. That's 13 years.
And he's a striker, which is even crazier.
Crazy.
Doesn't even make any sense.
Crazy.
That a guy could be that deep in the game, still keep his chin, and still starch people on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And because he's had hand problems, you know, he's broken his hand like 8 times.
A lot,
He's moved to kicking people now.
Yeah.
He's head kicking people. I mean, and with the same kind of speed.
Known as a puncher.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But the thing is you're like, your athletic prime, unless you're a Bernard Hopkins or something, is generally 10 years is a long time.
How much HGH is he taking? Let's be honest. There has to be some HGH involved in there. A little testosterone cream.
Throwing that out there.
There's just, I don't see.
Probably.
Unless he's some genetic freak specimen, but it doesn't make any sense anymore.
The fact that you could be athletically competitive at his age.
Yeah. I think the last guy to do it legit was George Foreman. I think George Foreman, and I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody for taking performance-enhancing supplements, but we know that they do. We know that they do. It's 100% that there are certain athletes, whether it's in boxing or in MMA or in whatever. This Lance Armstrong thing, man, drives me fucking crazy. I say that the real issue with Lance Armstrong was that he's a hypocrite
and
a douchebag. And he was a douchebag to the people that were riding with him, and he was a douchebag to the people that held his secrets about blood doping.
From everyone I've spoken to who's dealt with him, terrible human being.
He's a cunt.
Yeah.
So we all say that Lance Armstrong's a cunt. But why is he illegit and the other guys, are they legit? Like, if you take away his title, who wins that thing? Is there no winner of the Tour de France?
No, you know they couldn't find anyone. They couldn't. What happened was they went down. They had all dope too.
Yeah.
So they went, all right, so there's no winner for these 7 years.
They said for the year 2000,
unreal.
You had to go all the way back to 10th place to a guy who is this Italian dude who had never been accused or thought of as a doper. and never tested positive.
10th place.
10th.
You have an illegitimate sport, man. And you know what some doctors say? Ready for this? They say that it's healthy to take EPO and to take blood transfusions and to take human growth hormone and take testosterone if you're going to do something like the Tour de France, because it's unhealthy to do it without those things.
Dude, you're telling your body to go way beyond its normal limits.
Yeah, way beyond.
Come on. You're telling your body to go way beyond its normal
and
limits. Way beyond.
It's boring as fuck. How about that?
You're riding a bike.
I'm sure it's thrilling. I'm sure it's great.
It must be great.
To enforce your willpower and your determination and the amount of time you spend on the road just pushing and checking your heart rate monitor and to know that you're beating this guy with your discipline, your hard work, and your will to win and all that good. However, nobody wants to watch that shit.
Ugh.
You're riding a fucking bike, okay, you little kid. The fuck out of here. Bring, bring. Nobody's going to watch a sport where your bell sounds like this. Bring, 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 bring.
They do not have those bells on
these
bikes. They do. Yeah.
They totally all have should. Those bells.
They totally should.
They should have baseball cards in their wheels, and they should all have those bells. Bring, bring. You're a little child, Lance Armstrong.
But it's
You're
the old
child on a bike.
What's cheating if everybody's doing it?
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it. What's cheating?
It becomes a real question. Like, the real issue is, what is allowed? Can you take vitamins? Yes, you can. Well, why can you take vitamins? Why shouldn't you just get everything you need through your healthy diet? Because what are you getting out of those vitamins? If you're taking more vitamin C than you could ever get by eating food, is there a benefit in that? And what isn't? Does it show up athletically? And why should you be able to do that? I mean, I'm just using that as an example.
Right. Well, there was some supplement that Mark McGuire, they found in his locker when he was doing baseball. I don't know if you guys remember this.
Androstenedione.
I took
that shit.
Somebody, an Olympic athlete, got banned for life for that stuff.
Yeah.
But baseball didn't recognize it as a banned substance, so he was taking it. He was saying, I can totally take it.
They were called pro-hormones.
Right.
And there was a bunch of them that totally worked legit. One of them was called Mag-10, and they made this shit illegal. Dude, this was fucking steroids. It was steroids. I took it. My nipples hurt. I got way bigger. I gained like 10 pounds in, no bullshit, maybe 2 months.
Really?
2 months, 10 pounds of muscle. I mean, it was amazing. And you got it at GNC. The only problem was when you got off that, your dick said, sayonara. my dick was like, dude, I'm going to take about a month off before I start working again.
You got
again.
Inverted, son.
I remember beating off with a half-hard dick. I'm like, I haven't come in like 4 days, and I still can't get a boner. My dick was done.
Finished.
Like, yeah, it took a while. It took like, it was like at least a couple of weeks. Like, before I felt like normal again, because you were so elevated that your balls are like, what are you doing? And you're like, nothing. I just fucking taking this stuff I fought at GNC. But GNC used to sell, they used to sell that date rape shit, GHB.
Yeah.
They used to, the stuff that people overdose on and people throw in girls' drinks and molest them.
Right.
You used to be able to buy that at GNC. Like, GNC has had some legit shit there over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But I never took anything that was as strong as that Mag-10 stuff. That was you had to take a lot of pills, too. Like, you couldn't be even remotely confused as to whether or not you were doing something healthy, because you were taking, like, 10 of these foul pills a day. It was like a lot of pills. I'm like, what is the oral toxicity of this stuff? Like, what's it doing to my liver? Who cares?
I am jacked.
Just make you giant. Right. So they got rid of that. That became illegal, which is, I think, probably a good thing, because anybody like me could just go in and buy it. And, like, you don't know, like, if you're, like, an 18-year-old guy and you take that stuff, like, I took it for what it said to take on the package. I took it for like 6 weeks or whatever it said to take. But what if you're an idiot? And what if you take it every day for a year and then all of a sudden you have like cancer? Like, your body shuts down. Like, you have like liver issues where you might have to get a transplant.
The whole point of prescription medication is that a doctor tells you how often to take it, and you can only take it for a certain amount of time. That's the whole point.
You shouldn't be able to just buy something in GNC that can jack you.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be possible. It should be like buying calcium. Well, you take it. What happens if you take too much? I don't know.
Who cares? It doesn't do anything.
It'll be fine. But if you take like some of those like Mag-10 type things, like, you could shut your whole endocrine system down.
It's done.
Yeah, your fucking pituitary glands. Like, what are you doing, asshole?
Yeah.
Like, your body doesn't know what to do with that. Your gonads shrink. Like, I know a dude who is maybe in his 30s and he cannot have a child. he's trying to have a child with his girlfriend and his wife now. They can't have a child. And so they went to the doctor, and the doctor said, dude, you have a sperm count of a 70-year-old man. You broke your dick. You broke it. It's all broken now. Because he was all a bodybuilder when he was young. Apparently, he was gigantic at one point.
The candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long.
Yeah, but it's not even...
That's it. Dude,
it's not even a candle.
If you make yourself do something extraordinary, you make your body go beyond its limits for too long, it comes back way lower than it went in.
That's why it's fascinating.
It's the natural rule. It's the way it goes, man.
To see bodybuilding change from, like, the, what is his name, Reeves Day? Was that guy's name? George Reeves or Steve Reeves?
Whoever it was. Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah,
Steve
I mean, Reeves. They were, like, you know, they were built like...
like when you had comic books and,
They were built like Heath Herring, you know?
Yeah, Charles Atlas.
Yeah, they were, like, solid, you know, powerful-looking men, but they weren't, like, these weird skin-tight, vascular, freak alien-looking dudes that you see today where there's a picture of this guy flexing his ass, and his ass looks like it looks like ropes. It looks like someone's taken some giant, like, shipyard rope and made, like, an ass out of it. Like, it's all corded, and the guy has no body fat on it. Like, it can't be healthy. The guy probably can't even walk up a flight of stairs. He's ready to die.
You know what I don't get about bodybuilding? Seriously, I don't. Why the mentality of bodybuilding kind of is, when is it, okay, I'm good?
Never.
Because it's like fighting is my, I train hard enough to beat this guy. And if I did that, I train hard enough.
Right.
If it's, my ass doesn't look enough like a rope, or whatever, like, when there's no clinical... Yeah.
And the bar
you
keeps
can just
changing.
Do it forever. Yeah, your bar can just go up and up and up. I don't get that.
Well, you go back and look
at
Arnold.
I don't understand it at all.
Arnold, who was a fucking petri dish of chemicals.
Yep.
Okay, like self-admitted that he took steroids. And you look at it when you see him. But was nowhere near big enough to compete today. I mean.
Dorian Yates, guys.
Yes!
Giants,
all those guys. Giants, just unbelievably big. There's guys today that they don't even look real.
No.
They don't look real. So you look at Arnold, like, back in the day when he was like more like a Greek god.
Yeah, I mean, leaned up.
Yeah, he was way lean, but still filled with roids.
Yep.
It's like the changing of the perspective of, like, what we think of as a big muscular man. Like, now it's like cartoonish, unachievable shit. It's like you saw, like, Franco Colombo. That's a perfect example. Like, that is reachable, I think, without steroids. I think with great genetics, or Frank Zane, even better example.
Yeah.
Frank Zane was – he looked like a lean, athletic, muscular, well-proportioned guy.
Yeah.
He looked achievable. He had a normal-sized neck. He had a normal-sized set of shoulders. It was achievable. Whereas a guy like Dorian Yates looked like he was going to explode.
A Moss looked like the Hulk, dude.
Yeah, he just looked like he was going to explode on stage, flexing.
You know what sport freaks me out? Of all the crazy shit I have seen in MMA, combat sports, I can't watch powerlifting.
Oh,
because I just wait for that moment, which does happen sometimes, when the knee just explodes like a hand grenade, man. These guys are power cleaning, like, just ungodly weight, and your back just goes bing. It just turns to powder, like you're done.
I posted this.
When it goes bad, it goes so bad. I cannot watch it.
It's horrible to watch. Any if you, especially if you've
World Strongest Man on ESPN at like 2 a.m. when
they drop a barrel in their head, they're trying to throw it over the fucking cliff and it lands on their head.
It's so bad.
I posted a thread on the Underground about Rolfing. Like, if anybody had back issues, I was saying, like, I'm having some success with this. You should try it out. And someone posted an animated GIF of this kid, really skinny kid, and he gets into a Smith machine, and he's got all this weight on, and he curls it back to, like, release it, and then drops straight down on his neck. Like, knee is touching face, and the bar is on top of his neck. I don't even know if he lived. It's horrific to watch. But these motherfuckers, they post that in these threads, and they don't even let you know that they're going to post something like that. So you, like, scroll down, and then you're like, what? And then it changes your day.
Kind of like this video.
This is the video of the Bulgarian guy who was a politician. Someone tried to assassinate him.
Yeah, check this out.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The gun jammed. He stepped up, put the gun to his face. Wow, that guy, dude, that guy had some crazy eyes, man.
I know.
Look at this guy's eyes. It's right here.
He tried to reload it. And it tried to unjam it. Didn't work.
Wow. And then they played Let's Beat the Guy Up for the next hour.
Yo, man. And look how calm the guy swats away the gun. Oh, they beat him up for an hour?
Yeah, they're just, all these old men are just like fucking beating the fuck out of him. Like,
what are they saying? I wish I knew what they're saying.
Kick. I think the translation is kick him, something like that.
Kick him. Wow. Kick him.
I love Bulgaria. All of a sudden I want to move.
And I think this is a peace conference.
I would love that if they had that in America. If they just started kick his ass. See, I would not be able to stop myself from breaking his arms.
Yeah.
If I got a dude's arm back there and he just tried to assassinate someone, I'm gonna double his lock, motherfucker.
I'm breaking that shoulder.
I'm
man.
Snapping your shit.
Oh, they're
apart.
Pulling his pants down and they're gonna shove something up his ass.
I would shoot him in the asshole, right in the asshole. Take his gun.
What?
Well, you hilarious. Giving him a wedgie? Yeah. I would take his gun and shoot him in the asshole on TV. I'm like, we're all cool with this, right? I'm just gonna shoot him in his asshole, right up through the asshole. How many people have died that way? Probably a lot. Like, how many guys?
What's your definition of a lot?
More than a million. The time that we've had guns.
Is million, that millions a lot?
Millions a lot.
Millions a lot.
More than 100?
Millions a lot.
That's crazy. That dude attacked him.
Attacked him. He didn't just stand there.
But he went with the push. It would have been great if he KO'd him. Yeah. How about if the old dude head kicks him right here? Boom!
That is
the old
awesome.
Dude touches the gun with his left and then fucking Lyoto Machida's him with a right high kick.
That is some great security, by the way. Whatever country that is, you can walk up to a guy giving a speech and put a gun to his head.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Where were they?
That's outstanding Secret Service, whatever the hell it is.
Walter PPK, a little tiny ass gun. Yeah, that's a little fucking Banana Republic right there.
That is hilarious.
And if the guy shot him, he would be king.
Yeah, that's how it works. Oh, all right, you got me. You got me. All right, you're the king.
And they give him the throne made out of molten swords, like just like Game of Thrones.
It has to be a Game of Thrones reference. Cause
you ever see that show?
Anybody? No, never do. I never watch TV. I'm on TV every week. I never watch TV.
Really? You don't watch anything? But you're on TV for fights. You don't watch like History Channel, Swamp People. You never seen Swamp People?
Hardly ever. Dude, I just don't watch a lot of TV, man.
I'm fascinated by reality shows where people live in somewhere fucked up. Like, I'm fascinated by people that have to deal with nature all the time.
Well, the problem is my wife's a reality TV producer. So I just hear the backstory of, like, all the bullshit that's not true.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
But they really are killing those alligators on Swamp People. You can't get around that.
Cannot get around that.
And I don't like alligators. I've never liked alligators. Cool. So if I
like, likes an alligator?
Yeah.
I'm
not, you know, I think that people are fascinated by all these animals, but I would just rather have them all dead.
Pro extinction is my man.
I think they make good bags and shit. You know, but they're cunts. They're cunty old dinosaurs.
Yeah,
you know,
basically.
Like if they were everywhere, we'd be fucked. This is my thought about dinosaurs. Okay, if we had dinosaurs roaming our streets, we'd be fucked. We don't want dinosaurs. It's cool that we know what they used to look like, but we don't want them back. Alligators are fucking dinosaurs. They eat people. There was a guy who was running. It's a great story, actually. A guy was running from the cops 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a high-speed chase, pulls a car over the side of the road, jumps off because there's water. Like he's like at a bridge and jumps off in the water, lands right next to an alligator. The alligator eats him right in front of the cop instantly. The guy lands in the water, shocks the alligator. The alligator grabs him, drags him under, gator roll of death,
and that's
right
it?
In front of the cops. It's like a goddamn Clint Eastwood movie. So in that sense, I like the alligator.
Little Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom action.
In that sense, it's cool to have. It would be cool to have a moat. If you had a big giant house and a moat filled with, but you'd want crocodiles. But then you can't trust those cunts to stay in the moat. They'll come out and jack you.
Yeah, dude.
You got to provide them.
Down
with, like,
in Miami and Florida,
lambs,
like every now and then they're in the backyard and they'll eat a dog or something.
Yeah,
dude, crawl out of the swamp and like drag a little kid, drown him.
Oh yeah. Well, I lived in Florida and I didn't see it, but I was there when a lady got her dog eaten, snapped it right off the leash. She had a poodle. Poodle went to the water to get some, you know, get a little drink, and the fucking alligator just like, bitch,
that's what they do, man.
Yeah. Just took them right into the water. I didn't hear of a person dying, but that's just because they didn't fuck up. I mean, if you fuck up, it's not like an alligator like doesn't want to eat you. Like they think people are kind of nice to me. You know, it's like your reality is they don't understand that at all. They'll eat anything that stands still on.
I was down in Louisiana and I went to a gator farm and they said there's a, like they call it a 1 foot rule. An alligator will eat anything a foot bigger than it is. If you're bigger than that, it can't swallow you, so it doesn't really attack you. But if it's 5 foot and you're 6 foot, it will eat you. Which is just crazy to think about, because I saw a lot of 5 foot alligators. You know, I saw a lot of them.
Even creepier than an alligator is the Komodo dragon. You know, I remember
poisonous bite.
Yeah, it's super toxic. You remember what the fuck is her name from From Sharon Stone.
Yeah, Sharon Stone. Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. Sharon Stone and her husband got bit in the foot. Yes,
by a Komodo dragon.
This dumbass went into a Komodo dragon cage barefoot with socks on, and they saw the white sock and they thought it was a rabbit because they feed them rabbits.
That was it.
So he jumped on his foot, clamped down on it. It's a fucking real live dinosaur. It's 20 feet long, okay? These are the biggest lizards on the planet Earth. And, by the way, it's got botulism in its saliva.
Yeah.
It's got unbelievably toxic saliva, so much so that they kill animals by biting them and then following them.
They wait around until
days.
They die.
Yeah.
It's horrible to watch.
There's a water buffalo video where they do that. This Komodo dragon sneaks up behind this water buffalo and just gets it on the leg, just a little. And the water buffalo gets away a little bit, and then you see him like, oh, shit. And then you see him trying to get away a little more, and he's like, oh, shit. And then later on, they edit the video, and the Komodo dragon just eating its guts, just pulling chunks of meat off of its carcass. And like,
you know, as an athlete, I don't need that around. As a guy who trains and let's say, percentage-wise, myself and Joe Rogan can beat up 99% of people walking around on the street.
Anybody smaller than me that doesn't know how to fight, I will fuck you up.
Fuck them up, right?
Especially
so,
if you're not paying attention.
Exactly. Now,
and you don't have the will
alligator,
to win.
We're screwed.
And you have a cold.
We're screwed. Komodo dragon?
Yeah, we're
fucked.
You're fucked.
A shark. A friend of mine was surfing down on Huntington Beach, saw a 14-foot tiger shark. And he goes, it went underneath my board. And he's a good fighter, man. And he goes, I was like, I'm screwed. If that thing just turns to me and goes, I think I'll eat him. Yeah. I'm screwed.
Just let me try it.
That is the scary part of the natural kingdom. Human beings are not designed to take on very many animals.
Especially
without
in
getting
the
our ass
ocean,
kicked.
Man. You can't even run. You can't do anything. You might be able to fight off a mountain lion if you kick him in the dick or something crazy.
Ugh.
You know, you might be able
I think that would just piss him off, dude.
You might be able to arm drag him, get to the back, mata leão. Can you choke a lion for real? I don't know. But, I mean, if you scrap with him enough where he thinks it might be an issue, he might run away. But sharks aren't going to run away, stupid.
No.
They're going to just eat you. A tiger's not going to run away.
Dude, no way.
He's just going to eat you. Tigers are 1,000,000-0 against people.
Yeah.
No one's ever
they
won.
Are undefeated in a fair fight. Have you seen that Natural Geographic video where the guy's on an elephant?
Yes.
The tiger jumps.
Yes.
And you don't see anything. You're looking at all this grass, and they're looking for a tiger that killed some people, whatever. And you don't see anything.
Yeah.
And that thing leaps. And I've been on the back of an elephant before in India. You're high. It doesn't occur to you that someone could jump up there and get you.
It flies.
It slashes that dude's arm severely.
Yeah, he got fucked up, man.
He got fucked up.
But he stayed on the lion like a gangster, stayed on the elephant like a gangster.
That thing, that saved his life, dude.
Yeah, yeah, pull that video up, because the tiger leaps onto
India. It's in India.
Well, we'll see what happens. That video, Will? Why? Then the video's not.
National Geographic's all top of that shit.
I don't give a fuck. Pull it up.
Whatever it is.
I
want to
see it right now. Let's find
out.
Yeah, YouTube's been yanking out. You know what's hilarious about YouTube? YouTube will take our videos down because we just started uploading them to YouTube if we use videos that are from YouTube. So that's like YouTube eating
itself. I'm a little confused.
They get
it's like a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah, for a copyright issue, if you use a video that you got from YouTube and then you upload that to YouTube, YouTube is like, you are infringing on someone's copyright. And you're like, wait a minute.
That's your copyright.
Your shit. It's your shit. I got it from your site. Like, what is happening here?
Or are you kind of the snitch? Or is letting them know that there's copyrighted material on there?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what the issue is.
That's weird.
Because otherwise they would know that it's there from them. Because they're getting it through some sort of a bot. The way they get it from you is like they like send out this bot or, you know, have some program, rather, that analyzes all the YouTube videos and finds out whether or not there's music in them. And when it is, just, this is copywritten stuff. We're not going to get sued because we let you upload that shit. So you figured once they have something that's on YouTube and they keep it on YouTube, well, that's they've already got that. That's on their site. So if you show it on their site as well, it shouldn't be an issue at all.
Right.
But apparently it is.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was crazy because that one song that we played didn't get taken down.
The Michael Jackson one?
Yeah. No. Remember the two guys dancing in the street, Mick Jagger.
Oh yeah, that didn't get taken down.
David Bowie, Mick Jagger.
That's what got us. Yeah,
that's what's got us. But not because of the music, because I guess Family Guy had that in an episode.
Yes.
That video in the episode, so that it got taken down for Family Guy.
Are you kidding me? They must have bought the rights to that video.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that, it is. I forgot how gay.
It is the gayest video ever.
And fucking David Bowie got. It was so bad. It was unbelievable. But I couldn't believe that anybody would think that would be like, oh, here's the tiger.
Okay. Went there to tranquilize.
Oh, look at this fucking
tigers.
Thing running.
Look at this.
Look at
us and launched.
Look at it flying up to this
so
guy.
So one of our mahout,
jacked his arm.
Namely,
bad,
Mr. Sidiban Peg was injured.
Whoa, he's missing
his
fingers.
To hospital. Oh, now he is recovered. And
oh, dude,
okay
it bit
now.
His fingers off,
he's
man. You see that shit? His hand is like missing.
But look, there's a shot where you don't see anything. There's some shot coming up, I think it is, where you don't see. Look at, you're looking at all this grass. There's nothing there, and then it just comes out, and it's like, you're done.
That thing bit off half of that dude's hand.
Just imagine that thing coming at you when you're not on an elephant. You're just screwed. Kiss your ass goodbye.
It's amazing that it gave up. It bit off half of his hand and then gave up.
Doesn't like curry.
Look at this. Oh, you son of a bitch. Look at this.
Oh, that's
jump.
So racist.
Look at it. It just bites off his fucking fingers, son. Ow.
Ridiculous.
And it could have just as easily done that to his head.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
They are such frightening animals, man.
Yeah.
And the amount of people in India that's been killed by them is staggering.
I was in India doing a fight quest, and they were near this river, or near this like stream thing. And the guy turns around and goes, oh, I would stay away from skiing. Many cobras, many cobras. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be over here. Like, cobras like, oh, there's a mouse in my basement. Like, oh, there's a rat in my basement. It's like, oh, there's a cobra in my basement.
How many people die of cobras every year?
A freaking lot. Because they were like, I was near the stream, and they went, oh, many cobras there. Yesterday was cobra. I was like, I am
cobras.
Out. Out, dude.
The Sundarbans is an area in India where 300,000 people over the last 200 years have been killed by tigers.
I'm not
since
even
they started keeping track.
When they started realizing their deliciousness.
300,000 people
come
over
on,
200
man.
Years. That just makes my fucking head hurt, man. That really makes my head hurt. Like, what are you guys doing?
That is a population of a medium-sized city.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to give up to animals.
Like, Long Beach has, like, 500,000 people.
But meanwhile, they, like, still, like, try to, like, keep those things alive. You know, they work on conservation.
They do, man. They do.
They do. They have, like, a census team for tigers. And these guys have to go with these special helmets on with masks on the back of them because the tigers don't like to sneak up on you, or they like to sneak up on you, rather. So they put a mask on the back of their head. These poor fucks are wandering around in tall grass.
That is the worst job ever.
Think about that tiger in the tall grass. How it ran. It was running through the tall grass, and we couldn't see it from above.
Yeah, yeah, no shot.
Imagine if you're on the ground, and the grass is higher than your head, and you're there with two other dudes who have rifles. Have you heard anything?
Yeah.
Buddy, what is that noise?
Yes.
What is that noise? I hear a branch snap.
And that is it.
And you see it. This is the last thing you hear. And you're like, oh, no. It's a giant... orange and white monster
done.
That can fly.
Done.
And I'm going to try to like shoot it with a little rifle and get off a shot before it mauls me and my
friends.
Rips
your head off.
And what would you do if it just dove on your friend right in front of you? You would be so freaked out. Would you even be able to operate that bolt? Would you even be able to pull that trigger?
Joe, your ass would be gone, bro. I've been, like, if I'm walking with Joe Rogan and I get bitten by a tiger leaps out of the tall grass, Joe Rogan's out.
I'm doing
mental math going, it's probably taking him 4 minutes to eat Jimmy.
Yeah.
I'm saying 4 minutes maybe.
And I don't want to run too fast.
A little bit of muscle mass there, so I'm just going to slowly
like
walk away.
Slow.
How far away can I walk in four minutes is what your head is saying.
You don't want to insult his intelligence either, though. You don't want the tiger to go, bitch, you don't think I know you're running?
Right,
It's like maybe he'll respect you more if you just actually try to save yourself and just actually run.
Would you actually whistle? Just
no.
Like, hey, just
going
to back
what,
up?
What, bitch?
Just going to back up.
Motherfucker.
Just going to back up. You going to do the Diaz? I don't know if that
would
have to
do
that particular.
I wonder if bear spray would work on a tiger, like that bear mace, that fucking hot pepper spray.
I think it would just piss him the fuck off.
Damn,
man.
That's the last thing you want. He starts eating you dick first.
Let's just outrun your friend. The only method of getting out of a tiger's eyes is outrun your friend. Outrun whoever you're with.
At least if a tiger kills you, they'll just kill you. There's a lot of animals that would just fuck you up. Like if you get attacked by chimps, they're gonna
rip
you to pieces. Yeah, they might not even kill you. You might die, but they're just gonna torture you and rip you apart. You know,
a chimpanzee is 7 times stronger than a human.
I don't want to.
7 times stronger.
I did a thing with a chimp once, and it was a baby, and it was really weird. It was only like 2 years old, but it was like on my back and shit. And he was like hitting me. It was for news radio.
Yeah.
I don't even think we wound up using it. But the chimp like swatted me on the back. I was like this little baby, and I was feeling him. I was like, man, they're so singy. And then I was like, man, I'm so soft. I'm so mushy.
Yeah.
Like in comparison to him, like he was sinewy. It's like they're made out of a different thing. And he was still a little sweetie. You know, he was like a little. He would hug you and stuff. And he was a baby. basically. But he was already getting ridiculously strong.
I used to do a show called American Ninja Warrior, which is that thing used to be on G4.
Is that the thing where it's like the
parkour
obstacle courses?
Yeah, parkour competition. And one thing we always said, me and the co-host, a guy named Matt Eisenberg, we're like, God, I'd love to see a chimp go through this. It would almost be insulting. Just watch a chimpanzee just fly through this. Like, all these humans are falling and can't do it. And like,
well, they did that with Navy SEALs. Did you ever see that thing they did? They did a show, like, it was like man versus nature, where they did like a dude would sprint next to a giraffe would sprint. But they did a chimp.
We look pathetic.
Yeah. They did a chimp and a Navy SEAL. And I think that dude, I don't know who fucking won. I think the chimp might have got bored somewhere along the way and not figured out what the
animal
fuck
just wouldn't be motivated to like.
I feel like the chimp won, but I'm not sure.
It's not important for us.
I just feel like they could just, if they knew what you were trying to do, like, you know, like they know, are you serious? Like, are you really trying to go as hard as you can?
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought we were playing, man. Like, do totally. You think they understand that?
It's hard to motivate animals
on?
To do certain shit, yeah.
Like, why would he go, like, to go as hard as he can for survival's sake? Like, why would he do that? Well, you're essentially doing that. If you're like, on your mark, get set, go. You're going with every fucking fiber you're being. And this chimp is just kind of like lazy, swinging
doing whatever he wants to do.
Does he understand competition?
No. All it understands is survival. If there are two people going for it's food.
Yeah.
It knows to outrun that thing.
Yeah, he might know that he has to get there faster than you to get a cookie or some shit.
Yeah, like, you have to somehow train it to do that.
Yeah, because otherwise you're not going to really see what he could do. And otherwise he would get off the fucking ladder and beat your ass.
Compared to the animal kingdom, we are physically pathetic.
Yeah. You're lucky that chimp doesn't
just physically
stop.
Pathetic.
Like, if you want to really talk shit, he'll like, why are we swinging? I'll just come over there and bite your fingers
Rip
off, motherfucker.
Rip your face off, dude.
That was one good thing about that, the most recent Planet of the Apes. They were kind of realistic about chimp behavior.
Yeah.
And the chimp holds that dude down and bites his finger off.
Yep.
Like, yeah, that's what they do.
That's kind of their thing. Yeah.
That's the real move.
Screw that, man.
What a fucking creepy animal.
That's why I don't fight those things.
Pull your dick off. Pull your feet off. Pull your nose off.
Yep.
They don't even try to kill you. At least a tiger just kills you straight away.
And they'll eat you.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to some use.
Chimp will probably eat you. If they're hungry, right?
Chimpanzee, they're not meat eaters, I don't think.
They eat monkeys.
A chimp?
Yeah.
What size chimp would eat a monkey?
You never seen that?
I've never seen that.
You got to see this. Pull up.
Oh, I've been around orangutans. I'm thinking orangutans. I'm not thinking chimpanzees.
Pull this up. Yeah, I don't think orangutans.
Orangutans
do not. Yeah, chimps. One of their favorite dishes is monkey.
Wow. No.
They eat them alive, man. That's what's fucked up. They don't even kill them.
They try
they
to
eat
get
them like hip first. They like grab them by the body.
Oh, that sucks. They tried to get me those gross stuff on Fight Quest, which I didn't mind doing. I'll eat gross stuff. It doesn't matter
like
to me.
What kind of shit they try to
like
eat?
Like balut in the Philippines and like,
see,
you know, sheep
we served that on Fear Factor. And my Filipino friends were
delicious.
Like, that's a delicacy. Bring it
delicious.
Over here.
It was awesome.
Balut.
Right. And then, one thing they wanted me to eat was in Korea, they have you eat live octopus.
Whoa.
So the octopus is like fighting and trying to get out of your mouth. And
that's just
cruel. Like, I don't mind eating octopus. I love octopus, but I'm not going to eat something that's physically fighting me and striving to stay alive and shit.
I always love octopus sushi until I found out that most of it is cooked.
Yeah, most of it is cooked.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought, like, they would tell you if it's sushi, they would tell you if it's cooked. You know?
Yeah, most of it's cooked.
Think. Yeah.
My family's Greek, and they cook their octopus and do all
grilled,
stuff, and it's amazing.
Grilled octopus.
They grill it.
Yeah, octopus are smart as fuck. A lot of people like get kind of bummed out at people killing octopus because octopus have like a really high level of intelligence.
It makes them delicious.
And
whatever it is makes them delicious. Maybe it's all that intelligence.
Yeah, but maybe they'd be smarter if they had bones. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is these chimps set up this. See, these are like infrared. See what's going on? It's like if they back it up, they chase these chimps down. Oh, these chimps chase these monkeys down and cut them off at the pass, and then watch, they're all screaming while they have this, and watch how they eat it, man. They eat this little monkey alive. They got a hold of him, and they just start pulling it apart. These dudes are running to try to film this, because this is like the first time that anybody had ever observed this. Back before they observed this, they thought that chimps were just eating berries. They never knew that they ate they ate monkeys. Did you see it, that part where he tears them apart?
It didn't show it.
It didn't show it on that one? That was a censored one. There's the same video. There's the full version
of it. It's just like fried chicken. They just pull it apart.
He's grabbing it, and the monkey's like going like this. Oh, shit! And he's literally eating him hip first.
Yeah. That sucks.
They're mean, man. They're mean little motherfuckers. And they'll kick your ass.
Well, they're closely related to us.
Yeah.
So that explains a lot.
I wonder if during, like, the Roman days they ever had human versus chimp fights.
I do have a history degree. I do not remember reading it. It's humans versus lions a lot. They would put humans versus various, you know,
when
wild
people
animals. But
fought against lions.
I don't think
would they
chimps,
let them,
whatever.
What would they let them use?
From the things that I've seen, they would have like pike type weapons, like
spears.
Long,
and
yeah,
shit.
Spear type stuff. Yeah.
What? How?
Fucking
screwed. How fucked up were people?
The Romans actually made the Asian lion. There was a European lion at one point, and it's extinct now.
They made it extinct.
They took so many of them and used them for various purposes that they're extinct. There was a European lion in South Europe, and now it's gone.
This is the full version where you're going to see the chimp tear it apart. They start screaming and yelling and making noises, and all the other ones, they run in and watch how they're pulling this fucking monkey
apart. I did
not
know
this. They're just ripping this thing apart. This is a different video because this one is on the ground. The most disturbing one was the look at him eating the fucking monkey. The most disturbing one was there was a video of the monkey in the tree, and the chimp has the monkey up in the tree, and he's tearing apart while he's up there. And it's like, whoa.
That
you
sucks.
See the monkey's face going, fuck.
It sucks.
They're so close to people, you know,
yeah.
Their little monkey faces. Like, you really feel bad for
you
them.
You really feel bad when it's getting its limbs ripped off.
And they're getting eaten by another thing that has sort of a people face.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa, this is the closest animal to us.
People, I think, have a very kind of Disney view of nature in many ways, and it doesn't work that way, man.
Mm-hmm.
It is vicious. Human beings are vicious, too, but...
Yeah, I've been talking about that in my act recently about... Because someone got mad at me for... I don't have the jacket with me, but I had a fake fur jacket on. And some woman actually said that I don't like what your jacket represents. And I was like, it's fake fur. She goes, well, I don't like what it represents. And I was like, what, killing fake animals? I was like,
yeah.
I started talking about this on stage because it really is true.
It
it's
is
like,
weird.
It's crazy. Like, this is not a real – it's a Wookiee. Like, this is not a real animal. But the idea is that you shouldn't wear fur. Well, do you know what happens to animals if you don't kill them, if a human doesn't turn them into fur? They get eaten by wolves.
Okay? Generally speaking,
they get eaten alive by wolves. They get ripped apart, guts first. They chew them apart, and then they eat them. And they eat their feet, and they eat their head, and then they shit them out in a big knot of fur and hair
teeth
and shit. And that's what happens to you if you don't get turned into a jacket. Like, our idea that these beautiful woodland creatures are then taken and turned into terrible things that people wear, and it's a gaudy representation of our cruelty. Okay, you'd rather it getting eaten by a wolf?
Well, there's a great book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, and it's about, you know, this guy tries, you know, it's about food and where food comes from. And he goes hunting, and he kills a pig, and he eats it, and he goes, I felt bad. And then I realized, because he wasn't a hunter guy, like, you know, I kind of grew up, my family hunts and stuff. And he goes, the death, that pig died instantly. Which is a way better death than it's ever going to get in a wild.
Ever.
By some animal either
coyotes,
tearing it apart or
yeah.
it gets old and gets some disease and rots from the inside.
Breaks a
that's
leg.
It's a comparatively pleasant death.
Or, by the way, it gets eaten by pigs.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
If you're fucking, if pigs are hungry and a pig dies, they'll just cannibalize the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
They'll eat people, too.
Pigs, it's a cruel world.
Many times people have fallen into pig pens and been eaten by pigs.
Yeah.
They found a farmer recently. They don't know if he had a heart attack or what happened, but they were looking for him. They found his fucking clothes in the pig pen, ripped apart and covered in blood. Yeah, that's a pig. Pigs can go fuck themselves.
You seen
every
Snatch?
Pig, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that's one of the greatest.
That scene.
You know?
That guy was
feed them
awesome,
to pigs.
Bad
brick
guy.
Top.
With his
brick
fucking
top.
Crazy glasses.
This is shit.
Hence the term, greedy like a pig.
It was awesome.
With his tea, drinking his English tea. Yeah, that was a great fucking movie about English gangsters and fighting and pigs and such a romantic thing. It's kind of a funny thing.
Have you met Jason Statham?
Yeah. I met him in the UFC.
He's had a lot of fights. He was in Affliction when I did the Affliction fights.
Yeah, he loves fights.
Yeah.
He's one of those dudes
plays
– very, very nice guy. He's one of those dudes that plays the same cat in every fucking movie.
Over and over.
I'm brought in to kick ass. You
know, like this Parker movie that looks like every other movie he does. You know, there's some actors, man, who just find that niche and go, all right, I'm always going to be that guy.
Yep.
I'm just going to play that guy for however many years.
Yeah,
and that's
just,
it. That's it. I'm not diversifying.
It.
I'm just, this is my niche. I'm going to run with it.
Yeah. Eddie Bravo was going, you know what's important about him, though? He's an action hero, he's a sex symbol, and he's bald. He goes, we need more of that shit.
Touche. Touche.
It was really funny. It's true. He's like the first guy with like a receding hairline in years to pull that shit off.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how he, I was like, how did he do it? But other guys couldn't do it. You know, like Burt Reynolds couldn't do it. Like, why didn't Burt Reynolds realize that he couldn't do
it? Yeah. I've been shaving my hair for years. I don't like my hair. I just don't like my hair. It has nothing to do with any. Like, I have curly hair, so I don't like it. I do. Have you seen The Godfather?
Now, when you have curly
Sonny,
hair,
that's what I look like.
How
I look
does
Sonny
that affect the pubes? Brian, absolutely. You'd be an expert on this.
What?
When you have curly hair, how does it affect the pubes? Are they extra curly?
I don't know.
Do they, you know, because your pubes are almost always curly anyway if you have straight hair. Like, my hair is pretty straight, but my pubes
no significant
quite
difference.
Curly.
No significant difference. No significant difference.
Black people got especially it weird with the pubes. It's like, wow.
Really?
That's craziness.
Yeah, did you see Django?
Yes.
Jamie Foxx's junk exposed to the world when he's about to get his nuts cut off at the end?
Oh, that's
remember
right.
That?
Yeah, they grabbed him and they were
remember
pinching
that?
His nuts. You think those are real or were those like that?
You know, I've had like 10 people ask me that. Do you think it was real? I'm walking out of the movie and I'm like, probably? Unless he had some
shit.
Particular objection. Oh, yeah, every dude was holding his nuts in the theater.
By the way, very realistic. That's what they used to do to people.
Yeah, they did. They did. It sucks.
That's really fucked up when you really think that was only couple hundred years ago.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, really ridiculous.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Not even 200 years ago.
Yep.
Really? What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Like, what a wacky fucking species human beings are.
I have, my grandfather was really, really old when he married my grandmother. He was like 50, in his mid-50s, and she was 17 when they got married. Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah, my dad's dad. So my dad's dad was born in like 1880.
Whoa.
His parents could have owned slaves. That's my great-grandfather.
Wow.
Now, it's weird because there's this big age gap in my family, but... Yeah. My great-grandfather could have been in that movie.
Were they from America back then?
Whoa, Kentucky. They've been in the hills of Kentucky for, like, forever.
Did
now, my family was poor as shit, so
maybe they had a cheap slave.
They must have. My family poor. My family was, like, sharecropping, not the plantation-owning family, my family, no.
Kentucky's a strange place, man.
You're telling
it's
me?
So strange that they call it the Cincinnati Airport, but it's in Kentucky. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, they don't want to call it the Kentucky Airport because Kentucky's got such, like, a low... people have such a low opinion of Kentucky that they call the airport the Cincinnati Airport.
My dad's from there, so I can say it.
But it's in Kentucky.
That is
it's
hilarious.
Like you land in Kentucky and they
at
call
the
Cincinnati
airport.
And then you have to drive to Cincinnati. And like, why are you pretending that this shit is going down in Cincinnati? Like, you have a border and this is your border, but I guess the land was cheaper to put a fucking airport in Kentucky.
Must have been.
And then they just said, let's just call it the Cincinnati Airport. Fuck it.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it's because there's a massive insecurity with that state. That state has always thought of banjos and, you know.
Did you see that same movie, Lawless? With the moonshiners and Shia LaBeouf in there?
No. Good?
That's my family.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's about moonshiners and
your
stuff.
Your family was like Bo and Luke
Duke? Big time moonshiners and like, you know. And well, my dad always told me, and it's really true, and I've carried this with me a long time. He goes, people idealize country life. It's violent as shit. It was really violent back there. He goes, people had a problem. You killed the other guy, you buried him in the woods, and that was it. That happened all the time. Because it happened all the time. Because people think, you know, this idyllic country stuff. He goes, the people had a problem. You know, one guy disappeared, and that was the way it went.
Yeah.
The beef that go back like 50 years and stuff. That's where my dad's from.
Did you see that movie, Winter's Bone?
I have not. I heard it was good, though.
It's that chick from The Crying Game, or The Hunger Games, rather.
Yeah,
Crying Game. Crying Game is one of the guy who has a dick. Right?
Yep.
Girl.
Yes.
It's a really fucking creepy movie about the South, about a guy who turns up missing, and then the police are looking for him, and they, you know, it's, I don't want to give away any, but it was
right.
A really fucking good movie.
Oh,
and about that, about how, you know, this is our idealized view of, oh, just good old country folks. Like, no, there are a lot of people smoking meth, and there's a lot of people that disappear.
Yeah.
And
you're
not going to find them either, by the way.
Nope.
There's fucking crocodiles out there, and there's, you know, I mean, how many, like,
acres
drop a body
acres
off
of, like,
in the Everglades? How are you going to find a body in the Everglades? If you have terrible, terrible luck, some alligator hunters will come by your floating corpse.
Yeah.
And then they'll call the cops. But most likely, they're going to eat that thing.
You're done. Stories I saw in that movie, I was like, God, my dad told me these exact same stories about his cousins and shit.
Really?
Yeah, it's violent back there.
Isn't it amazing, too, that all that shit came about back when alcohol was illegal? That's where all that...
That's where everything came from.
Yeah. All that organized crime, Al Capone type shit... You know, that was the birth of the criminal empire in this country. It was the fact that they were suppressing people and keeping them from having booze.
Yeah. When it's true, when society and laws don't match, when something's socially acceptable and it's not legally acceptable, there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's all – it's always, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, whenever you have that disparity, when socially it's not a big deal and legally it's a big problem, that's a problem.
Yeah, it's unavoidable. Always. People are just like, fuck you.
Yeah, gay marriage is illegal in California. Nobody in California really cares. Yeah. It's not like the laws lag behind what people really find socially acceptable. That's always going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And, you know, when it comes back to MMA, the fact that it's still illegal in New York City.
God, disgusting.
In New York State drives me fucking crazy. And that it all comes from a corrupt union. And it comes from the culinary union trying to strong-arm station casinos into going union. It's crazy shit.
It's ridiculous. And people drive to Jersey and watch shows. Yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy that it's legal.
You're not saving anything.
You're losing a fuckload of revenue for the city, too. Yep. Millions and millions and millions of dollars. They could, I mean, can you imagine if they had, like, an Alistair Overeem versus Cain Velasquez heavyweight title fight in Madison Square Garden?
Be awesome.
Holy fucking
shit.
Awesome. Holy shit. It'd be crazy.
Be awesome.
But they can have kickboxing. So, like, Glory could put on a big event, a big kickboxing event in Madison Square Garden. Kickboxing is legal.
That makes no sense at all.
No, doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's weird that that kind of corruption is still so transparent and still right in front of everybody, and still you still get politicians to say nonsensical, non-scientific, yeah, not fact-based shit about the sport. And because of the fact that most people are ignorant of the sport, you can get away with saying stupid, ridiculous, non-scientific shit, and you don't lose your job. You know,
yeah,
you, like that. What the fuck's his name? Whatever the guy's name is, the one main. I don't even want to mention him. The main guy in New York that's constantly talking bad about MMA.
Yeah.
The guy that's been paid off by the union. Like, that guy is wrong, like, all the time. When he describes it, how he, you know, he doesn't sit down with anybody and have debates on it about the safety aspect of it, of, you know, what tests involve and how, yeah, it compares to other shit like NASCAR racing or football or, you know, all different things that we accept that have shown to cause death and horrible injury. And that's just a part of life and competition. We're fine with that. But for this one thing, you're telling everybody that they can't do it. You're, yeah, telling everybody why. Oh, are you being paid by the culinary union? Yeah, you are. Well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it should be, get the fuck out of here. Everybody should go, you're fired.
Yeah.
First of all, it should be on the front page of the news. Did you know that this guy has this opinion? He's being paid by the, his opinion is not scientifically based, it's ridiculous, and doesn't support the opinion of his constituents. And he's being paid by this union that is trying to keep the UFC out of New York. You'd be go, well, you got to get that guy out of office. That guy's a fucking scumbag. He's corrupt. But it's still going on.
A loud lie is stronger than a quiet truth, unfortunately.
In the age of the internet, these motherfuckers.
That's the way it works.
So,
man,
what's next for you guys? You have King Mo,
yes,
this week, Thursday
King
night.
King Mo this week.
Is it Thursday night?
Yes, against Premislaw Maciala, which sounds like some kind of like a bacterial infection, something he might have. I've picked up.
He
in Vegas.
Yeah,
Premislaw Maciala,
given
Polish
birth
fighter
inside of his balls.
And then Carl Amasu versus Ben Askren.
Ooh.
And then we have the start of a 170-pound tournament.
That Ben Askren guy, man, that's that guy is a wrestling fool.
Dude, sticks to his. He just takes you down, takes you down, takes you down, takes you down, takes you down.
You gotta
can't
have
stop
to,
him.
Boy, you gotta have to figure out how to have like a Marcelo Garcia type ground game to,
yep,
deal with that guy.
Damian Maia, somebody
him
like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
but other
maybe
than that, his grappling, his wrestling is so fucking good. He can just keep holding you in positions you don't want to be in.
Yeah,
he's great in scrambles and. Is just his wrestling ability and his technique.
And it's so
in wrestling
funky. If,
yeah,
you if you found an Olympian, and I remember watching Ben when he was in the NCAAs, wrestling in Missouri, and then in the Olympics, I remember watching Ben, and his style is so funky that even if you found an Olympian and went, okay, this will be my training partner, get ready for this, he's not going to wrestle like Ben Askren.
Yeah, he does weird shit.
Totally.
When everybody goes to the right, he goes to the left, and then goes under you, and you're
right,
like, what is going on,
yeah,
here?
Exactly.
And, you know, he's deceptively strong.
Dude.
And you see that a lot. Like, guys who, like, physically, they look like these beasts, and he locks
Douglas
fucking
Lima.
Yeah,
threw
exactly
him to the moon, and you're,
yeah,
like, and he told me, and everybody keeps telling me the same thing, and if you're going to fight Ben, you have to understand, you're going to get taken down, you spend some time on your back.
Yeah.
They make this like line in the sand where Douglas Lima told me, he goes, oh, I felt so good. I was like, there's no way this guy's going to take me down. And he threw me, and I went, oh, shit. It's going to be a long night. Dan Hornbuckle told us, he said, I'm going to stop his takedown for 2 minutes, and then I'm going to eat his ass up. He couldn't stop it for 10 seconds. And they,
yeah,
just mentally kind of give up because they go, shit, I was supposed to stop this, and I can't stop this at all. You have to accept I'm going to be on my butt at some point in this,
yeah,
fight.
I think he's very important. I think those guys are very important to the ultimate goal, which is to figure out what is the best way to approach any situation. You know, I think if you look at like the kind of textbooks that they have available now in football, where they've got every fucking play documented, they,
yeah,
have all these variations on the plays, different things that have changed during plays that have made them more successful, or errors that were committed during these plays, and they have it broken down down in a real scientific, professional way. And I think for a guy like Ben Askren, I think that exposes this new level of wrestling ability, this, you know, really unusual Olympic quality wrestling that nobody seems to be able to deal with. Okay, you have a problem. How do you solve it?
Right.
What is it? Is it another wrestler? Is it a kickboxer? Is it a guy who's got a nasty guard, like a Shinya Aoki type guy who lets him take him down and then just traps him? What is it that you have to do to get past that style? Because that fucking style, whether or not you think it's boring or not, a lot of people think it's boring, it's super effective. And the reality of a fight is that what is effective is what's good. And someone's going to have to figure out how to stop that. And it's super important to have a guy like that, a guy who can do shit to everybody that no one wants them to do to them.
And the thing is that, you know, Damian Maia, I know before he fought Weidman, he said, I'm the best mixed martial artist I've ever been, and he lost. Like, yeah. It's almost like when he started becoming a mixed martial artist, he kind of got away from what made him good,
yeah.
And he started losing fights.
Yeah.
And Ben never does that.
Yep.
Ben goes, I'm a wrestler. I'm going to take you down. I'm a ground and pound you. I'm going to use my jiu-jitsu. He says, I'm getting all these other skills, but I'm going to take you down until you can stop me.
Well,
he
also,
almost
Ben's...
never gets away from that mentality
right.
of a wrestler. He never
but
gets
his
away from
strength
that.
Is the takedown. See, that's yeah. the key to that. The description, Damian Maia is not a strong takedown guy.
Never.
I mean, he has done some things like when he hit that lateral drop on Chael Sonnen and mm-hmm. wound up triangling him. That was a beautiful takedown, but the reality is he could not take down Anderson, so he's got whooped on for 5 rounds.
Yeah.
Or at least 3 and then 2 rounds of chasing him.
Right.
But you watch that and you see the two of them move around. You're like, you know what? I don't see any scenario where Damian Maia can take down Anderson Silva unless Anderson's injured. I just think Anderson's takedowns. His defense is too good, his speed is too good, his technique is too good, and his striking is too fucking scary, and your timing's going to be off because you're going to worry about eating a flying knee that you didn't think anybody could ever reach you with.
Right.
Anderson reaches him with a knee in that fight. There's a flying knee that he hits Damian Maia with where he leaps halfway across the fucking octagon and connects with his chin, and you're just like, how did he get that far? Like, it doesn't even make sense. It's like a Michael Jordan-type jump where you see him jump and you go, how the fuck did he cover that much distance?
Carlos Newton, the timing of his flying knee. Carlos Newton coming in pride.
Yeah.
Cleaned his ass.
Caught him clean. And that was after getting really dominated on the ground.
Yep.
Carlos mounted him. And, you know, Carlos really was eating him up in the ground game. But it's that combination of, you know, the abilities is what makes Anderson so fucking spooky.
Yeah.
You know, is that he can defend himself on the ground, and then when you get to standing up with him, oh, look, you're in deep shit now.
Yep.
He can do shit to you that you can't do to him.
And his ability to evade physical pressure.
Yeah.
You see that, you know, Bonner tried to do it, Yushin Okami tried to do it, kind of put physical pressure on him, and he's so elusive and evasive. That's the hard part, is that you try and kind of pin him. You know, like, I'm going to get him, and I'm going to pin him down and make him feel the strength. Hard to do.
Yeah.
Only Chael Sonnen did it effectively.
We need a guy in that division. Like, Vitor was a real threat. Before that fight, you're like, well, you know what? Vitor has some fucking serious hand speed. He's put knuckles to a lot of dudes, and, you know, anybody that stands in front of him and he catches him with that same blitz he hit Vanderlei with, or Rich Franklin, or Akiyama, you know, you know that he could do that to anybody. But after that, after Anderson knocked him out with a front kick to the face, you're like, okay, well, who's scary for him now? There's no one scary for him right now.
No.
Maybe Weidman. Weidman's a beast. He's a tough guy.
Weidman's well-rounded and physical, and all, but he doesn't – you don't go, okay, this is the tool he's going to use necessarily. Like, he's a tough dude.
It'd be his wrestling.
It'd have to be his wrestling.
It'd be beating him up
once again,
or submitting him, trying to submit him.
Yeah.
And he's fucking cock strong, that Weidman, too.
Oh, totally.
He's
totally
a big boy. Has a real struggle to get 85.
But we were talking about, you have 3 divisions, I think, in the UFC, 170, 185, and 205. Where the battle to see who gets the title shot is a lot more interesting than the title fight itself, because you have dominant champs in those divisions.
Yeah,
one guy's away.
I'm really excited about a few different fights at 170, but I'm really excited every time I see Johnny Hendricks. That fucking dude.
Dude, he's a beast.
He is just
lazing on you.
He's hitting dudes with these punches where you're like, what are they like? Is there like a stun gun at the end of his hand
Seriously.
Or something? Like, what's happening?
If only he could wrestle. Oh, wait, yeah, okay, shit.
Well, not only that, the thing that people don't know about Johnny Hendricks is his fucking jiu-jitsu is ridiculous. He taps people like crazy in the gym. It's just he hits so hard that he doesn't even fuck with that when it comes to a fight.
He's a scary dude. I think he's got the skill set to really give GSP problems.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's one thing I think might be his kryptonite is... when you put it on GSP, he tends to go, oh, shit. He tends to have that backup button. He goes to his takedown. He goes, okay, and goes to his takedown that might not be there against Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah.
That's why he might have the capability to actually give GSP some trouble, which no one has so far.
If GSP can take down Johnny Hendricks, people are going to be like, get the fuck out of here. How is that
he
guy
could,
doing
He could. His timing is awesome.
Struggle with
and
Jake Shields.
Struggle with Jake Shields.
Jake Shields really didn't. You know, I mean, and granted, he did get poked
John
in the
John Fitch
eye in that
took
fight.
Down John Fitch. I mean, he took down some good guys. Josh Koscheck.
He fucked John Fitch up on the feet, though. I mean, he had him hurt from punches. Fitch is another guy that's like, man, what heart, what determination, but his physical like prowess, his athletic ability lags slightly behind guys like GSP.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, I know he's worked hard on that. Like, that was something that he like looked at after that fight and tried to improve upon. But how much can you improve upon how much of a mesomorph you are? You
yeah.
know? You look at a guy like GSP, like especially after he came back from his knee injury and he started doing gymnastics. He's fucking
shit. Dude is swole. Strong as shit.
And can't amazing timing.
Great timing.
Timing between striking and grappling. You never know what the fuck's coming. He mixes it all up. He's not predictable. And he's smart. And he's always in shape. And after that Matt Serra fight, he's never going to fuck off again. You know? He fucked off one time. He gets starched. And he realized, okay, you got to take every fight 100% serious.
That was the wake-up call.
Yeah, you have to be a professional. What do you think about Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez? What did you think about that fight?
I thought Junior Dos Santos got years beaten off his career.
Yeah.
I looked at that and I'm going, please, Cain, just hit him hard enough one time for them to stop this. Because there was a few times the ref was going, give me a reason to stop this fight.
Yeah.
And Dos Santos, to his credit, I don't want to say stayed in the fight because he wasn't competitive, but didn't go down, didn't get finished. But it would have been better for him if that had been stopped in the second round.
Quite honestly.
He got beat so bad. But things, when you go back to the drawing board, if you're Junior Dos Santos' camp, and you go back to the drawing board, he got taken down. He got beat up on the feet. He got outworked. His cardio wasn't there. So it's kind of like, okay, we have six things we got to fix. It's not like he took it. Like, when he knocked out Cain, they could go, Cain, keep your damn hand up, or whatever. I know he had a knee injury. But there are things you could fix. There's a tweak you can make. There are about seven tweaks they got to make to Junior Dos Santos after that fight.
Well, apparently,
that's not easy.
The latest is that he's going through a divorce, and that's why he was not in the right frame of mind. But that didn't make any difference to what Cain did to him. Cain was a monster
all
that
over
night.
Him, dude.
He was a monster. He dropped. He cracked him with that right hand. That's the Super AIDS back there. You hear that shit?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay away from
that. That's the exact opposite of what Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez have in life.
Right, exactly.
Your Super AIDS. You're the polar opposite of those guys.
Little Esther logged into her Amazon on my iPad, and so now I've been adding all these things to her wish list, like black anal beads and dildos and sex machines.
Oh, what a sweetheart you are. What a good guy. While we're here talking about fights, you fucking freak.
I know,
freak
God,
weirdo.
Dude. That's weird.
I was almost bummed out that Alistair Overeem pissed hot because I really wanted to see that fight.
Okay,
Junior and Alistair Overeem.
All right, let's talk about that. I want to talk about this.
Okay.
We talked about steroids before.
Yeah.
Okay. And the tone of the conversation, everybody said what you just said right now. God, he pissed off. We're not going to see that fight.
Yeah.
The tone wasn't that dirty cheater at Oberlin. No one got on their moral high horse about
right.
it. Everybody just went, God damn it. Now we're not going to see that fight.
Well, it was just such an exciting
just like,
fight.
Oh, everybody wants to see that fight.
And it confirmed what everybody always suspected about Alistair. You're looking at
what?
Like, how
horse
is
meat?
It possible? How is it possible to get that big? Well, then Paul Harris just pissed off. You know? And the other guy we were talking about was this ridiculous physique. He just pissed hot.
You remember when Vitor got into the UFC? Fight at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Like the muscle was glued onto him.
He
it was like ridiculous.
At 240,
man.
Now he's 185.
185?
Your frame holds. All right. I walk around like 185.
Dude,
okay.
That's 35 pounds.
It's ridiculous
Think
amount.
Of
that's
that.
50 pounds of muscle, dude.
85 to 240.
That is ridiculous.
What is that? That's crazy. That's 55 pounds?
Yeah.
That's insane.
55 pounds of muscle that doesn't belong there.
That's insane.
And he gassed against Randy. What?
That's insane.
Come on, dude. It's a backpack with 50 pounds in it you're carrying around.
55 fucking pounds.
Of muscle.
I'm having a hard time believing that.
But it's true.
Yeah, when he fought Randy, he looked like a lion.
It was unbelievable.
His traps were so big.
Like, his head looked like a zit on top of a mountain.
Yeah,
that's what it
gigantic.
Looked like.
He was gigantic back then. Yeah, 185 is the right weight class for him.
It is. Well, he never had knockout power at 205, right?
Yeah.
Like, he could stun you with his speed.
Yeah.
But at 185, he hits you once and you don't know where you are. And he never had that at 205.
He's like a blitzer, but, you know, down him training now down in Florida with that Black Zillions team,
yeah.
Vitor's always been a sensational athlete. And being with the Black Zillions, they got that Henry Hoos guy who's really technical, Dutch-style striking. And that guy is the one who's been training all those guys. He's with Tyrone Spong and yeah. Alistair. I think that that's going to be really good for Vitor to elevate the technical aspect of his game. Because you saw in that fight with Bisping, he still got ridiculous abilities. I mean, that fucking left high kick, that was very quick.
Yeah.
You know, since 1997, you know, fighting from 1997, now here he is in 2013. I mean, we're talking about almost a 20-year fucking career.
Right.
And the guy's still landing high kicks like that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it was amazing.
He's got incredible physical abilities. His problems have always been, A, psychological, mental. Getting him mentally into the fight has always been hard. There's been fights where he's looked, the second Randy fight, for example.
Yeah.
Third Randy fight. He didn't even look interested. The second fight at 205 in the UFC, and he didn't even look interested in that fight. He looked mentally beat. Like, and, you know, that's been his problem in the past. I think he's got a lot of mental issues, and hopefully he's getting over those.
Yeah, but I think
he's adding more dimensions to his game, and that's awesome.
He's certainly gotten better. He could, though, conceivably challenge Anderson and make things very interesting if he could avoid getting cracked again like he did. You know, and you know, he could. I mean, you look at, like, their scrap on the ground where he was throwing these wild punches. None of them landed on Anderson. But, man, what if one of them did? Things could have been, and that's a big what if, obviously.
Yeah.
But things could have been very interesting. Because it was quite a go until that front kick landed to the face.
Yeah.
Amazing how many dudes are throwing that now, isn't it?
Everybody's throwing it, dude. Everybody's throwing
it. Nobody threw that before.
Everybody throws it now, but they don't set it up properly. It's kind of like the whole reason it works is that not a lot of people throw it, and you're not looking for it, and then it comes right up through the guard.
Yeah.
But people don't set it up, and they throw it by itself, and you're like, it doesn't.
Well, it was the perfect technique to use against Vitor in that circumstance, too, because Vitor had to close the distance on Anderson to use his hands. So he was, like, more inclined to move forward and more inclined to not give up ground.
And box is really heavy on that front leg.
Yeah.
So he's kind of leaning over that front leg, and that's what happened.
And so he probably thought it was coming to the gut. He's going to tighten up real quick and just get pushed back a little bit, and boom, it hits him right in the chin. And you go, oh, what a highlight reel shot. Anderson is just a fucking
–
his
freak.
Whole career is just a series of highlight reel shots, you know?
Freak.
Yeah, it's cool to have a guy like that around, though.
I remember when he beat Hiroto Sakurai.
Yeah.
That's how freaking
old school
I am.
Remember when Takahashi, was it Takahashi that caught him? Caught him in a triangle?
It was,
Takase.
Daiju Takase.
Takase.
Yeah, caught him in a triangle.
With shoes on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of
course, Daiju Takase was considered, by some at the time, the best grappler in Japan.
Very good grappler.
Just underrated and, you know.
Super, super technical.
But just,
came at the wrong time.
Could never really get it all together.
And then that Ryo Chonin flying heel hook that he caught Anderson with, that was
ridiculous.
One of the most insane moves of all time. Joe Lozon loves that. He dives that. You've won some fights with heel. Didn't you submit Jason Chambers?
Yeah, I've been in with an inverted heel hook, yeah.
That's a nasty technique.
Yeah,
you
dude,
can't
it's bad.
Tap quick enough.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and was like, are you? Okay.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
It's not a good one.
That
at
rips
all.
Your shit up.
Yep.
Chews your meniscus up. And sometimes guys don't come back from that, especially meniscus, because the inside's all fucking.
Oh, they got to put a cadaver meniscus in there. It's bad.
Do they do that now? They use cadaver meniscus?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They started, like, stuffing
dead
shit
people's
in there?
Dead people's.
I have a cadaver bones in ligament. There.
Really?
One of my ACLs. But it actually becomes a scaffolding. It's kind of an interesting thing they do.
Really?
Science is amazing.
Isn't it?
Medicine.
It's incredible.
They put you back together again. I have both my knees put back together again. But the right one, they use a cadaver. The left one was a patella tendon graft.
Uh-huh.
So what it is the cadaver graft, it sits in there, and then your body starts building cells through it. It works as a scaffolding.
Oh, okay.
For your body to kind of replace all the cells in it with its own natural cells.
Yeah.
And it actually becomes stronger than the initial ACL that got blown out.
Oh,
once
cool.
It's fully, completely healed.
I have, thank God, no knee problems, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I did lose a minor stabilizer in my knee when I was fighting James Wilkes.
Like an MCL?
The minor, no, on the sides of your kneecap, basically. These two tendons that kind of like button your top and bottom bone together.
Uh-huh.
And mine just popped and just came off.
So you don't have one
there? I don't have one there. But a doctor told me, he goes, it's not a major stabilizer, you're fine. It's a funny story. I'm fighting James Wilkes, and I'm going for a knee bar on him. And we're rolling around, and I hear this loud pop come from my knee. And James had really good Muay Thai, and I went, I can't stand up limping.
Right.
Period. Like, so I'm rolling for this knee bar, and I wanted it anyway, but in my head I went, well, either I get this knee bar, I'm pretty screwed. So we're rolling around, and I get this knee bar, and I crank it, and he taps. And I stood up, you know, I went in, they raised my hand, and I walk out of the cage, and I got a couple steps, and I can't walk anymore. And I went, if all the adrenaline I have in my system, I can't walk right now, this is really bad. I mean, I couldn't get to the car.
But they never surgically, did they repair that one? Mm-hmm.
I guess they can, but I guess it's a big deal. And they're like, well, you'll be all right. And it's never given me a problem since. Like, so it's just, it healed up in like 3 weeks. And
everybody I know that trains has something fucked
I'm
up.
I'm very lucky. My neck, yeah, for me, is my neck. Is the one. The only shot that ever, I'll stop sparring is when I get hit on top of the head.
All right, we got to get out of here. This is 3 hours into our conversation, dude. We could do this 100,000 fucking times.
Dude, we have to start about MMA, we could do this forever.
Listen,
I live in Culver City, man. Am I from LA?
We're going to bring peace to the MMA world because there's a separation between between Bellator and the UFC. There's like everyone thinks that we have to be enemies.
Yeah, I don't get
it. We say bullshit, man. We'll sit down and talk some fucking fights.
I don't get that at all, man.
It's good for everybody.
Joe Rogan's a man.
It's good for the business. It's good for the sport. It's good for the enjoyment. Like, the idea that you shouldn't enjoy the UFC or I shouldn't enjoy Bellator is ridiculous.
Stupid.
But I want to thank you for being the guy that I enjoy the most when it comes to commentary, and when I watch you, like when a referee does something stupid and you yell at him, and when a guy's, you know, going for something and you call it, and you know, I think you do an awesome job, and it makes watching fights very exciting for me. I really appreciate that.
That means a lot to me, and I want to say that Joe Rogan basically blazed the trail for everybody like me in MMA broadcasting in the kingdom.
I got lucky. I came along, and I didn't have to worry about losing that gig because I had another gig, so I could talk shit.
Works out well.
It worked out well. We all got lucky. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with David Cho and our buddy Yoshi, and then Wednesday will be the return of Rick Ross. Rick Ross back in the house, bitches. New pieces of evidence in the investigation, and he has a new trial date. Rick Ross, the real Rick Ross, not the rapper. And Rick Ross is selling t-shirts now that say the real Rick Ross is not a rapper, because we told him to do that on the podcast, and he started doing it. So he's making money off of a fucking scandal, ladies and gentlemen. Follow Jimmy Smith on Twitter. It's Jimmy Smith MMA. And you got a website?
Nope.
Nope.
I don't even have a business card, bro.
Good for you.
I
love it.
Ghetto, man.
That's how you're supposed to do it. Thanks to onnit.com. Go to O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan and save yourself 10% off any and all supplements. Thanks to... I can't find the website. Thanks to Bladeslinger for sponsoring our podcast as well. And you could buy Bladeslinger on iTunes for $2.99. Kerosene Games, bunch of cool motherfuckers, and we're happy that they're a part of our podcast. And thanks to Ting. If you go to rogan.ting.com, you can save $25 off any phone or service. And if you want to switch over, go Google that thing that Brian was talking about earlier and find out what a ballsy move Ting has done, picking $100,000 and putting it into account to give you your money back when you switch, where your money is going to get taken out of your account. Like, they're going to say, oh, well, if you want to break this account, it's going to cost you $150. Ting's going to give you that money, bitch. And then you could apply it and, like, essentially, like, get like a free year service for it. How perverse am I? Do I talk too much? Yes, I do. That's why I do this. All right. Because everybody's meant to do something this life, folks. I'm here to talk some shit. All right? So we'll be back. We'll also be back tonight at 12:30 a.m. in the morning with Ensign Inoue. Chuck Liddell's bringing him in here. So we'll see if we can get Chuck in front of the microphone as well. But Ensign Inoue, if you don't know, old school MMA legend, like one of the original pioneers.
Went toe-to-toe with Igor Vovchanchin. Look it up.
One of the craziest fights of all time. We'll have to play that tonight. And he also is doing a lot of tremendously heroic work helping the people of Fukushima. He goes back there to these terrible radiation zones over and over again, bringing them aid, and he's just a cool motherfucker, and I'm honored to have him on the podcast. So that's going to be 12:30 a.m. in the morning, all right? All right, you dirty fucks. All right, we love the shit out of you, and we'll see you soon. As Joey Diaz would say, stay black!